Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Okay, Ted. George Washington. One, father of our country. Two, born on President's Day. Three, the dollar bill guy.
Bill, you ever made a mushroom out of his head?
It's like this, like, Alaska.
Okay. Had wooden teeth, chased Moby Dick.
That's Captain Ahab, dude.
Oh, wait. Remember Disney World? Hall of Presidents?
Yeah, good. What did he say?
Welcome to the Hall of Presidents.
Hi, brought you guys some food.
It's your mom, dude.
How's it going, guys?
Bad. You're destined to flunk most egregiously tomorrow.
I'm destined to end up at Oates Military Academy.
And then we will never start our band.
Good. Good.
What are you guys studying anyway?
History.
Mr. Ryan?
Uh-huh.
Tell him hi.
Why don't you guys take a dinner break?
Thanks, Dad. Now your dad's going for it in your own room.
Shut up, Ted.
Your stepmom is cute, though.
Shut up, Ted.
Remember when I asked her to the prom?
Shut up, Ted!
Wait a minute, hold on. I hate the Elvis Costello, the whole thing here, but I think we've set the proper tone yet. Don, hello, how are you?
I'm fine.
I don't think we've properly established a benchmark. I don't think we've really set any sort of a baseline, a water level for quality today so that people can truly appreciate the Rick Emerson Show.
Okay.
I mean, you know, we did our standard intro of the following is brought to you by, and we, you know, we played a movie clip from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. All good things. But I think there needs to be something laid down against which we can be compared, something against which this program and all that it contains can be contrasted. So that people might, if or even the tiniest flicker of a moment in their brains, if they hadn't really properly assessed the quality and entertainment potential of this program and the way that it enlightens them, enlightens their load every day, so that they might properly judge that sort of thing in some kind of context.
And I'm assuming then that you maybe have something that you could offer them.
Well, let me just play
as
this
a benchmark.
Hold on a second. This is hold on a second. Everything's better with Christianity, Don.
Yeah, 8 a.m. waking up in the morning, gotta be sharp, gotta do my hair. Can't find a bowl, no time for cereal. End of the weekend, time is going, ticking on and on, everybody rushing. Gonna go to church at the stop. Can't forget my Bible, God is my friend. Mom is in the front seat.
God is my friend.
In the back seat. Gotta make our minds up. Which service will we make? It's Sunday, Sunday. Head to church on Sunday. Everybody's looking forward to the Easter weekend. Sunday, Sunday. Celebrating Sunday. Everybody's looking to the Easter weekend. Worshiping,
yeah.
Looking forward to community. 9:30, we're stepping in the service. Music, message, don't want time to fly. Fun, fun, church can be fun. You know that it is. I got this, you got this. Communion by my right. Hey, I got this, you got this. Bring back it, kick it in the front pew, sitting in the back pew. Gotta make my mind up, which road will we take? It's Sunday, Sunday, head to church on Sunday. Everybody's looking forward to the Easter weekend. Sunday, Sunday, celebrating Sunday. Everybody's looking to the Easter weekend. Worshiping, worshiping, yeah! Worshiping, worshiping, yeah! One, two, three, six, looking forward to community. I dream birth Thursday, Thursday, and deck Friday, Friday. We so excited. We so excited. We know Jesus is alive today. Yesterday was Saturday, and Monday comes after church.
Yes.
I don't want this service to end.
Yeah. Hey, Sadie B, it's your main homeboys, BP and Master E. I'm chilling in the front seat. I'm riding shotgun. BP's driving. We're going to church on Saturday night. Ho! Tomorrow is Easter. Oh, look, there's a tree
and a fire truck
and another car. That car is orange.
Nothing rhymes with orange.
Let's go to church. It's Easter weekend. Come on, come on.
It's Sunday, Sunday. Head to church on Sunday. Everybody's looking forward to the Easter weekend. Sunday, Sunday. Celebrating Sunday. Everybody's looking to the Easter weekend. Worshiping, worshiping,
yeah!
Worshiping, worshiping,
yeah!
One, two, three, six, looking forward to community.
A man, is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. Now you're a man, a man, man, man. Now you're a man, a manny, manny, man, a man, man, man. You are now a man, you're a man. Now you're a man. Live it, live it. What makes a man? Is it the woman in his arms? Just 'cause she has big titties? Or is it the way he fights every day? No, it's probably the titties. Now you're a male.
Yeah.
A male.
Oh, there we go. That's better. And hello to you. It is 38 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of April in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed and joy-filled studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. So, don't you feel like we put things in proper perspective?
I think so, yes.
Why do you insist on ruining that Rebecca Black song? I'm sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Oh, because it was so good before.
I didn't mean to trample on it.
Oh.
You know, he really is accurate when he says that nothing rhymes with orange, though. I mean, you can't get around that. And that Jesus is, in fact, your homeboy. All right. We can thank our friend. And thank and friend, by the way, are relative terms here, I think. Siegfried. For that. He sent it to me with a little note. And here's the thing. That is by the Community Christian Church of Long Island, I believe. The girl's name is Sadie. It had improbably only 108 views when I went there.
Aww.
So we are, I think we are among the first to inflict that on an unsuspecting public. After which I imagine suicide. So there you go. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964 if you'd like to be part of today's program. It's 503-505-6964. It is Friday, April 8th, 2011, and welcome to day 12. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. That is rick at rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be reached at Don, D-A-W-N, at rickemerson.com. Or you can Skype us if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show. That's our username via Skype. Or online in the text box at rickemerson.com. So there you go. It's, let's see, Friday. Now I can't even say without triggering the stupid thing in my head. It's Friday, Friday. And so forth. 503-505-6964. Coming up today, we got your corpse watch, penis watch, clown watch. I think we've gone like 17 days in a row having a clown watch. We're on some sort of a clown watch jag, some sort of a spree.
It's, yeah, and I've got actually two to choose from today. There is just, people have just gone clown crazy.
Which one is the most horrible?
I think they both are like really molesty. Are they? So.
Not just kind of molesty.
Oh, actually, no, they're the same story. I just have them printed out two different times. Okay. So there's only one story.
All right. So you can just, it doesn't seem like molesty is sort of a, that seems like a bit of a binary state. That's a thing that something either is or is not.
So just want to mention, I just saw on the Facebook, the Barfly Award nominations are out for Jen Lane's magazine Barfly. And my Hamfisted radio partner, Bobby Roberts, is nominated for his freelance work for the Portland Mercury under the category of Most Good Writer. And our friend Sarah X. Dillon is nominated in the category of Best Drunk.
Excellent. Fantastic. By the way, that she's I believe she has won that twice before. So there you go. So she's the John Larroquette. That's ironic, I guess. But she's the... She's the Bryan Cranston,
yes,
of the Barfly drunk. That's somewhere. There's a photograph. I don't know where it is, but there's a photograph somewhere of Sarah and I at the Barfly Awards, where I won something or other. I won some crap, and she won probably that. And that one of us is wearing our Barfly sash, and one of us is wearing our Barfly, because it's like when you win, you get like a sash and like a thing and a bag of crap and whatever. So one of us is wearing like a sash that says like, you know, Best something, and then one of us is wearing a tiara, and I think I might be the one wearing the tiara. And here's the thing about it is that we both look like we have just won for Best Drunk, because it's like, and it was at Sabala's, I think. I think it might have been right before Jason Sabala sold that place, or I guess Mount Tabor Legacy, or whatever the hell we call that place now. I've become just the old guy where I just call it Sabala's because that's what I always knew it as. But it's, you know, whatever, with the Mount Tabor place. But it was either right as Jason Sabala was getting ready to sell the place, or it was right as he was selling it. And it still had that, it was like he walked in there and it just smelled like sort of metal and ass and just beer and death and just stink all over the place. And it had what, I mean, and this really is saying something, it had what I think is the filthiest public bathroom that I've ever seen, like, in my life. Like even as a man, where you don't have to touch anything, like you're not having to, like, you know, you don't really have to be touching your body to the ceramic or the, you know, anything. But even just like, even just unzipping your pants and just exposing additional, you know, square inches of your skin to the air in that place was enough to just make you wanted to go get like a tetanus shot or something afterward. You just felt like you were going to be just covered in some sort of ick. But anyway, so well, congratulations to Bobby Roberts and to Sarah Dillon for their nominations for Best Something and the Outstanding, whatever the other thing is. So there you go. Bam. It is, now I can't even utter the word Friday. It's become enough. I bet this is a national plague, by the way. I think this is probably a thing that is affecting X number of the X percentage of the population of this country, where you, when people, you know, you find yourself saying it's Friday, or if you find yourself, what day is it? It's Friday, or is tomorrow Friday? And then everybody in the room looks at each other with that moment of, is someone going to do it? And then you all just sort of agree to go ahead in the conversation and not acknowledge it.
We should just take back Friday. We need to take back Friday from that song. We need to play the Village People song, Thank God It's Friday.
constantly.
And own Friday.
You know what? We need to re-empower ourselves. We need to take it back. Is that what we need to do?
We need to take it back.
Okay. You know what I just discovered yesterday? You know the video for Friday? You know the guy who's rapping at the end?
I have never seen it. I have tried to avoid this.
You are terrible.
You
don't get bonus points for being out of touch with pop culture. Especially but not on this show.
If something's irritating, though, don't I get to just avoid it as much as possible? Believe me, I haven't been able
if
to avoid it.
If you're a plumber. Okay, you have to go sit in the corner for the next few minutes. For the love of God, really?
Really? The sound of that song. First of all, it just grates. The way it sounds, it grates. Yes, you're right. It's catchy. It's poppy. But it's got that kind of drill in my head sound. And it's not very good. And I don't care. And it's going to be over in like a week. And then I won't have to care about it anymore. So it's just, you know, believe me, I know it exists. People keep bringing it up. Stuff happens. It's in the world. I know it's there. I haven't had to go seek out more of it.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I guess some of us will just continue to stay current with what people are talking about so that we might banter with them in amusing fashion.
I know about it!
You can just make Full House references.
I'm aware of it!
It's okay. Now, there's stuff from last year you can talk about, I'm
I
sure.
Know
there's
her
people
name.
Still into
I know that.
That.
I know that her mom paid for the damn thing, and it cost like $1,200, and it was like a demo thing, and then it went on YouTube, and it got big, and there's 7 billion parodies of it, and now there's this Christian. I know about it and that it exists and what it's about. I know.
I was just going to make an observation, a fun fact, if you will, a thing that I found legitimately interesting about the guy who raps toward the end of the video that's driving in the car, okay. Except you don't know about the guy driving in the car.
No, but you can...
So that's when you say that, like, I know that the whole thing is ruined now. Now
fun,
I just can't...
The fun fact may still be fun, just...
Doesn't matter.
Because I haven't seen him.
Doesn't matter. It's good, because I do the show to you, and so if I'm just throwing it to you and there's just no batting it back, then it's like, then I'm just basically talking to myself. That's fine. That's okay. No, don't worry about it. I'll write an amusing blog post about it later or something. It's fine. Don't worry about it. All right. Corpse Watch coming up today. Penis Watch, Clown Watch. Top 5. The top 5 you like. It's something from a long time ago. We can reference, you can make jokes about that. It's from 1983. People remember 1983, probably. So we got that coming up later on. Plus, Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Friday.
Because you're so down with what's hip with all the kids.
Not with the kids. I'm just saying with, it's not so much kids, it is just, you know, people. But that's okay.
Well, so if the government gets shut down...
There's no need to be snarky about it.
I'm not being...
But I'm down with the kids. 98 million people have watched that video. That goes beyond being down with the kids, unless you consider Stephen Colbert the kids.
Yeah, but you started this whole thing a long time ago, because that happened in the 80s, so maybe you'll know about that.
I'm just saying internet culture moves quickly. You gotta stay up with it.
Okay.
You can't just, you know, come on, blah, 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 lolcat, and then, you know. That doesn't work.
I'm just forbidden then from just not wanting to pursue information about something just because it's popular?
I'm saying if you're going to do a show about, what is that, what's the word before culture, popular culture, then you might want to know about it, is my only thing. And hearing this, no. See, here's the thing, you don't. Because hearing the song is like less than half of the equation, because it's not about the song, it's about the video. Mm. It is about the video. If it was just about the song, you never would have heard about it. That's the whole thing. The entire phenomenon is based on the video aspect of it, not even the audio aspect of it. So, and it's not a thing that, like, you have to think is good, but, I mean, the idea that there's something that is, like, that is on its way to becoming the most watched video in the history of YouTube, which is an important cultural force, and that you are now, like, willfully avoiding it, that just seems irresponsible to me. That seems like professional malfeasance.
So it really has nothing to do with my own personal desires, is what you're saying. I owe it to the show and to the people and to you.
Yes.
To stay on top of this stuff.
Well, yes.
Yeah. I will now consider myself chastised.
No, I'm just saying. It's okay. No. I just, as long as I understand where your dedication lies, that's okay.
Do you want the news headlines?
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. If the government shuts down, you might not be able to go to a park or something. A man finds a boa constrictor in his chair, and a naked man fires an AK-47 at a robot.
Is that here? Is it in the United States?
It was in the United States.
Okay, so it wasn't in Portland, but it was in the United States.
Yes.
Because a naked man in an AK-47.
Our favorite state.
And a robot. All three things at once.
Yes.
Fantastic. All right. So that is all of the ways. We got those three stories. We got the Corpse Watch coming up, Penis Watch, Clown Watch, the Top 5, which is actually from Wednesday, I believe. Yesterday we did Eric. And Eric said he was fantastic, by the way. And so many emails to that effect. So I went a second, everybody, or third, or 12th, or whatever it is. Eric D. Snedder, who stepped in and filled in on Legion of News and on this very fine radio program yesterday. So thank you to Eric Snyder. And you can hear him. Do they archive that show, right? So you can hear
it.
Do they have their own website, or is it just a Cascadia.fm? Like, if you wanted to hear it later.
They probably have their own website. I really don't know.
So go to Cascadia.fm and look for Movie BS with Baron Snyder. And you can, if you did not hear his program today, it airs live 11 a.m. At the noon Pacific time following the Corden Fatboy show and before this program. And you can download it later on. So Eric D. Snyder and who is the other? I just know him as Bear and Snyder. What's the other guy's name?
Jeff Bear.
Jeff Bear. So Jeff Bear and Eric D. Snyder, Movie BS with Baron Snyder at Cascadia.fm. Also, one final note here. We might call him up later on today, but I just got a text message from Jim Willig saying he's feeling slightly better, but he is still filled with jiggling crap. So his navel cavity is all it's all just jam full of whatnot. So he will not begin the day because he doesn't want to come in and just like be spraying his sputum everywhere. So thank you for that. It is 503-505-6964. What else? We have something else to get to that was sitting in front of me moments ago, and now it's gone.
Well, there's a page with a bunch of your stuff scribbled on it.
Nah, that's stuff that I moved over to yesterday, yesterday to today. So we'll get to something else. Oh, somebody wants to know, this is, I want to know, is there a third flavor of pub cheese? Dawn has talked about the original, you've talked about the jalapeno. Somebody told me that there was a new flavor of pub cheese out. Is that what she was eating yesterday?
There is a third flavor, it's horseradish, and it is delicious, but that's not what I was eating yesterday.
What were you eating yesterday?
I was just eating the straight cheddar.
Is that from, when you say pub cheese, now is that like a brand, or is that just a kind of cheese?
I thought we talked about this before.
I don't think we ever got to the bottom of whether it was like just the whipped cheese in general, or if that's like a Trader Joe's like trademark.
Well, I think it's just the product itself is called pub cheese. I think they're calling it pub cheese because there is a specific pub snack in Britain. That's beer cheese, where you take softened cheese. And I think it was a way originally to use up old cheese that hadn't been used for actual snacks and stuff. You let it come to room temperature. You beat it in a mixer with like butter or sour cream cheese or whatever. You can do this yourself at home. I've done it myself. And you add a little bit of beer to it, and they call it beer cheese. And you serve it as a spread with crackers and bread and stuff, and it's a pub snack. But I think because this doesn't have beer in it, and they don't want to confuse the customers, they're calling it pub cheese. But it's essentially the same thing. It's softened, it's soft cheese that you can spread.
So I think
stick your crackers.
So I think the question derived from the person wondering, because there wasn't a Trader Joe's where they lived, and so they were wondering, therefore, could they find it?
No. I mean,
or is there some? In other words, could you find it at like your local grocery store under a different name?
Not really. It's similar to the Kaukauna.
What?
Was it Kaukauna? I don't know how you pronounce it. They're in Wisconsin. It's the Kaukauna brand.
Are you sure it's not? It sounds vaguely Hawaiian.
I know, and I always thought it was Hawaiian, but it's not. It's like Washiga or what was that? Waukesha. It's like that. It looks like it should be like a Hawaiian or an Indian name, but it's in Wisconsin. But anyway, they are in Wisconsin. We always used to pronounce Kaukauna because we thought it was Hawaiian, but I think it's actually pronounced Kaukauna, and it's Kaukauna. And it's a spreadable cheese stuff. And the pub cheese is similar to that, but it's actually even softer and more whipped. So it's really not like anything that I've seen in, like, the grocery store.
You're not talking about, like, laughing cow cheese and that kind of stuff,
no,
are you?
No, you've seen the little containers of the cheese spread, and then there's the cheese balls that you can get, that they're a ball of cheese rolled in nuts and things. And
balls rolled in nuts?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
But anyway, it really does seem to be unique to Trader Joe's.
Okay.
And it's quite delicious.
Somebody wants to know if you're drunk.
No, I'm just kind of loopy. Just
says,
goofy
is Dawn
having
drunk?
A day off.
She's just making strange noises now. Someone else says, it sounds like Dawn is saying puffed cheese. That sounds delicious.
That does sound delicious.
Then later, pub cheese. Ooh, that doesn't sound very good at all.
Also, I may be just having this crazy endorphin rush because in between the shows, I sat here and I just mainlined an entire bag of cheese and caramel bugles.
Okay.
And that was my lunch. And I think I've got like this whole weird like sugar endorphin, you know, preservative rush going on in my brain.
I thought you were turning over some sort of new nutritional leaf recently.
Yeah, I was.
So like, I'm gonna shape up and get, you know, look, it's not like I'm the picture of health or something, I also, you know, but at no point do I ever go like, I'm gonna be a better person. That's never gonna happen. So I don't peddle those lies.
Yeah, the problem with that is that I'm obsessive compulsive in that way that it's like all or nothing. So if I'm going to eat well, it's got to be completely planned. So I have to go to the grocery store and I have to stock the house with all of these really good things so that I can plan my meals in advance and I can take care of everything. Because if I don't do that, it just becomes this thing of like, what do you want for dinner?
What's in arm's reach?
I don't know. What is there? There's cheese and you know, and cookies. So, or Patrick, damn him, introduced me to the joys of Marie Callender's frozen pot pies, which are like $2. They're really cheap, and they're insanely delicious, but they have about 7,000 calories.
Yeah.
So I've been eating those. And then it's just, once you get on that train of just eating crap, that's all you want. That's all your brain will accept is food. Then you start going, I should eat a salad. And your brain goes, salad?
It rebels.
Pizza. Have pizza.
It's like you're trying to drive your car in reverse. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Okay. It's like nothing looks good after that unless it's loaded with carbohydrates and fat and sugar and salt.
So here's the thing. You just reminded me of Syd Barrett. Syd Barrett, who was the founder of Pink Floyd and then went crazy and vanished and, you know, lived at home with his mother, you know, kind of to the end of his life. But at one point, Syd Barrett had been gone from the group for a while. And he came in and he went nuts and was just, you know, and nobody had seen him. And then he showed up while they were recording Shine On You Crazy Diamond, which strangely enough is about him. And so he walked into the studio and they didn't recognize him. It's not because you're bald, by the way.
Oh,
but,
thank you.
But Roger Waters, you know, talked about, and then suddenly there was this great big bald mad person in the studio. and it's, you're really none of those things. I mean, that's not why I was reminded of this anyway.
All right.
They asked Syd, they said, so, because it's like, how do you make conversation with the crazy guy from Pink Floyd who's like living with his mom? And he said, so, how you been, Syd? What are you doing? And he said, well, I've been eating a lot of pork chops. And you just sort of had that, you just had that kind of delivery just now when you were talking about like, well, and there's all these Marie Callender pot pies and they're delicious. And he apparently went on and rhapsodized at some length about the wondrous crisp nature of the pork chops and how great they were.
Yeah, yesterday was kind of like this weird, crazy, like mini vacation for me because, you know, Patrick was going to have his procedure. Then he wasn't going to have his procedure, but I'd already arranged to have Eric come. So I decided to just take the day. And it was just this day of like, got up, prepared a bunch of news to send off. So you know, Eric had news. Went back to bed, got up, worked on the ukulele for a while, and ate cheese and crackers. You called. I went back to bed for a while. I had like these great sausages from Trader Joe's. I had some more cheese and crackers and sausages. Patrick came home, but Patrick was only home long enough to drop off some groceries and then go back out to go gaming. So then I was home alone for the whole evening with like new food.
Just you and the pork chops.
And so, yeah, so I had the pot pie and ice cream. And like I said, I was watching The Simpsons, and they reran that episode of The Simpsons where Homer doesn't go to church and stays home all day dancing around in his underwear and making the giant waffle. And like, I found a penny. Is this the best day of my life? And I kind of felt like that yesterday. It was just...
While you were on the phone yesterday, presumably talking about Justified, and you know, we did have some technical issues, but it really did sound as though you were using about 3% of your brain to talk about Justified, and the rest was sort of like you were deep inside like a General Hospital rerun or something.
Well, you told me you were going to call around 2:00, and then
I called in the 2 o'clock hour,
and then 2:15, 2:20 came, and I went, I bet he's not calling, and I said I'm going to give him till 2:30, and if he doesn't call by 2:30, I figure he's not. He's not calling. So 2:30 came, went. I was like, all right. So I went back to the office.
I might as well get drunk.
Well, no, I went back to working on the ukulele, which meant that I had this bottle of this stuff that's like full of linseed oil and resin. And I had a rag and I had the windows open because it was like all full of fumes. So I'm breathing in all the fumes. And then I'm wiping the stuff down. And then I hear you, because I'm listening to the show, and I hear you say, "Hey, we're going to go for a, take a break. And then when we get back, we'll make a call to Don Taylor." And I was like, crap, because I had resin and linseed oil all over my hands. So I run off to wash my hands and realize that it won't wash off. I had no idea that it just wouldn't wash off.
I don't even
hands.
Know what linseed oil is.
I'm not sure either.
I mean, it just sounds like a thing that, I mean, it sounds from seeds of the lin tree
yeah.
or something.
I don't.
And
yeah.
resin is like resin, like on a like, no, that's rosin that you use on a yeah. bow.
No,
what is resin?
Yeah. Resin comes from trees.
Like plastic?
Yeah.
All right.
It comes like from like trees, and then you use it on things and it hardens. Like shellac, for example, is not a resin. It actually comes from boiled down insect bodies.
Okay.
But it's a similar thing where it's you use it on wood and it hardens up and it creates a, you know.
So your hands are covered in boiled insect and,
right.
and oil.
Yeah, and it won't come off. And I washed my hands and it wouldn't come off. And then you called, and I'm sitting here and I'm all worried. I've got this stuff in my fingers. And I'm woozy from being in not as ventilated of a room as I probably should have been, you know, working with this stuff. And then my fingers are gluing together, and I'm worried about what I'm doing to my iPhone by holding it with my resin hands. And then we had connection problems, so it wasn't really the best appearance.
I like the idea that you were somehow thrown off by the fact that a segment on the show happened later than it was advertised as happening.
Well, but the thing is, you're
very... He hasn't called on time.
But when you talk about making phone calls or taking phone calls at 2 o'clock, you're generally very good about that.
Well, that's to other people.
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
that's true.
Those are other people who have jobs to get to.
But again, though, sometimes you just don't do stuff. So I thought maybe you would just said, "Oh, we won't call Don. No, we're running short on time. Oh, we're running late. We won't call her." So I kind of just figured at that point.
I think the train of thought was like, she can't possibly be leaving the house or doing anything productive. She's probably just sitting around covered in insect bits. And so, I mean, we'll just call her in a bit. This message says, "Damn it, I was searching the internet for delicious puffed cheese, and now I find out it doesn't exist. God damn it." So we've ruined his day. Somebody else just says, two questions. This is really why this audience is fantastic. Two questions. Have you ever eaten Lowry's bacon curls?
No.
And do you want some?
Well, yeah.
Well, of course, the answer is always yes. If the first question is about some kind of food, and like, have we tried it? And then the second question is, would you like to? Yes. It doesn't matter what it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's like even what were those things? The bacon cheese food slice things.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like those were, you know, I mean, those were fairly vile, but I mean, I'd never tried them before, so hey, why not? I mean, it's like, you know, you should, you know, because one never knows when is going to stumble on something fantastic. So there you go. All right. Wait, hold on a second. Ugh. And let's see. Finally, Jessica says, "Thank you so much for playing the Sunday song. I have been having a horrible day, and I just lulled." So there you go. Well, doing our part to make you lull, Jessica. That's what we do here. Here's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for... he said, "I'll bring by bacon curls next week." God bless you. That's Ben, I think. Excellent. Thank you, Ben. You're doing the Lord's work, sir. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. Let's see. Today we wanted to welcome... Listener, for the love of that, Joshua. So welcome, listener Joshua, and thank you for joining us. We're proud to have you as part of the assembled family here. So you got listener Joshua joining us today. It is the Rick Emerson radio program coming up later on. Corpse Watch, Penis Watch, Clown Watch, Top 5, and more. I got this whole thing about Facebook. That's the thing that I was trying to find written down that I made this note to myself yesterday, and we never got a chance to do it when we were talking to Eric about. Well, I'll just say it, which is that. So I don't know the last time. Do you have the Facebook app on your phone?
Yeah.
So I don't know when the last time you opened your Facebook app was, but I just logged in and I couldn't figure out how this was. Somebody's calling us now. Hold on a second. Let me try to figure out exactly what's going on here. Hello, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson radio program, sir or madam, is the case, maybe. Why, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, hi.
Okay, thanks for calling. All right, appreciate it. So I just logged into my Facebook thing, you know, or I went there, and you know, there's that thing, it does the little badge on the front where it shows you, it shows you, like, how many messages or whatever you've got sitting
yeah.
there, like, there's the little red circle with, the, you know, the white lettering, and it just said, And it said 194. And I thought, well, how is that possible? Like, Like, how is it possible that I have 194, you know, like friend requests or messages or something stacking up? I mean, even though, you know, sometimes I'll just put that stuff off because I wait and I do it all at once at the end of the week or something. But how, like, it just seems like more than I could ever, I mean, you know, even with the vast and globe encircling popularity of this program, how could that be? And apparently what it is, so did you get the big thing from Facebook that they've rolled out like all of the new messaging stuff now?
I might have, but I don't.
So
I don't
if you
know.
Haven't seen this, I guess they're probably doing it as like some sort of a tiered rollout. So you'll see it the next time you actually log into Facebook, or probably sometime before the end of the weekend. So now Facebook has revamped again. It's irritating in like 100 ways. Because A, it requires like going back and checking all my privacy options again to make sure that Mark Zuckerberg isn't like looking up my ass or something while I'm sleeping. But also, they've revamped the whole messaging section because they have now consolidated the regular messaging, you know, like where you're just sending somebody a direct message, instant messaging, and now the Facebook email service, which is your username at facebook.com. And so that's now all on one page. So now whether you have opted in or not, you now have this sort of Facebook email address, which I guess is fine. I mean, it's fine to do that, except I don't think there's any way to turn it off is the problem, which means now it's just like one more email address that is just going to come directly to my thing. And also, I don't entirely know whether this is true or not, but I don't think you can be checking your Facebook email address like from another email program. So in other words, I don't know if my Facebook, if my like Rick Emerson at Facebook.com, if I can get that to show up on my my iPhone. And so now people are already emailing and saying that it's the new Facebook messaging system is awesome.
Yeah.
It's just one more thing now that I have to manage.
Oh, I don't. I may or may not have been added to mine yet. I don't know.
You'll be able to
if
tell
I
go to the message
if I go
section.
To messages.
And it'll say that.
Yeah,
it'll
walk
you through it.
Yeah, it says I've got 164 messages. And then, yeah, and then there's claim your Facebook email.
Yeah.
Text messaging is on. Chat is online.
Okay. Yeah, so now, in addition to all of your other stuff, you now have, like, DawnTaylor666 or whatever at Facebook.com.
Yeah.
So just become...
And I need that why when I already have
well, it's because
two
everybody,
other email accounts?
It is not unlike how it was in the... It's all like in the late 90s. Everybody, in a weird way, it's like we're just reliving the 90s all over again because it's... We've made that observation several times now about the political atmosphere as regards Barack Obama and the Republicans and the way that there's sort of a specific kind of contention happening in Congress. And it all seems very, very reminiscent of the mid-90s. But the other thing that seems reminiscent of the mid-90s is that now everybody is back to jockeying to be your, wait for it, internet portal, which was the whole thing in like 1997, 1998, 1999. Is like we've had three different eras, as I see it. I mean, not just three, but I mean, but these three happened consecutively. Everybody trying to be your portal, which for a while was Yahoo, and then for a while it was, it was like MSN.com or something. And then I think for a lot of people, Google just became their portal. It became the homepage from which they went to everywhere else. And it was like yeah. Stop number one on internet land tour. And that was because of phase number two, where everybody was fighting over being a search engine. Now we're back to phase number one of everybody trying to be your portal, except now it's like in a much more expansive and all-encompassing way, like Facebook, or in terms of the actual hardware, where like the Xbox is trying to be your portal. The Xbox is trying to be like... The first place you go to get to everywhere else. And they're all taking a page from AOL doing that.
Yeah, Apple tried to do that a few years ago because I remember when Mike Russell was one of the first people I knew who got a MacBook. And there's the whole thing where you would get your MacBook and then you got your Mac account, your Apple account, and your Apple ID. And they gave you, you know, an address at .mac.com or whatever it was and your email address. And they tried to do this thing where everything would be funneled into them, but it didn't really quite work because it was clunky, so it never really quite, you know, caught on.
So it is, but we're back to everybody sort of throwing elbows trying to be the one method you use to get online. And I think the Facebook is probably more than anybody except for, I mean, not even Apple, but I mean, really, more than anybody except for Google and possibly Microsoft because of Xbox. I mean, Facebook is pretty well positioned to do that. But what's weird is I went to the doctor's office the other day. I'm in the doctor's office, and it's like even and it you know and it at my my insurance company who I don't think I ever really identify who my insurance company is, but I will say that. Little volume level thing. I was dropping it for the phone call, which we opted not to take. But I was at my insurance office, and it's like the insurance company has now just opted to have you go to Facebook for all their stuff. I mean, like, you know, it's like if you have questions about your insurance coverage, visit us online at facebook.com/ and then it's like the name of my provider.
That doesn't seem very professional.
Well, but it, I mean, but it was, and it was like integrated into all their stuff. Like the Facebook logo was like on all their brochures and on all their posters and all of their branding, where it shows like the really pleasant, like very carefully like multicultural group of people, like, you know, sitting around a computer and looking up pharmaceutical information or something. Or it's like, you know, like a grandmother with a blood pressure cuff smiling. And then it just says like the name of the company, and then it says Facebook at the bottom. And it clearly is not like a thing they just stuck on in Photoshop. Like they have partnered with Facebook somehow to do it. So it is sort of... it is sort of odd that Facebook, not unlike Google before, it has just become like less a portal and more of a utility. So this, the email thing is clearly like that's their next big push to try to just monopolize like every corner of your life. So my whole goal this weekend is to see if I can get that turned off. That's job number one for me.
I have a question for you before we move on to anything else. We have our listener Jeff Futzer. And so he inspired at one point, we had coined the term that something was futzered.
Was that was something was screwed up?
Yeah, I think so.
They got all futzered.
Or something.
All
right. And I have a dictionary.com as an app on my phone, the dictionary, and they give you a word of the day. Mm-hmm. And the word of the day that popped up on my phone today, futz.
Yeah.
F-U-T-Z.
Isn't to screw around with.
To pass time in idleness.
Yeah.
Usually followed by around. Futz around.
Yep. No, I thought about that when we were talking about the futzering of something, and whether that could be considered, you know, etymologically speaking, if that was sort of a derivation of the existing. Woody Harrelson says that in The People vs. Larry Flint, when he's trying to get the photographer to take a picture of the lady's nether regions, and he keeps, you know, and he's got like the whole thing at the position. She's holding like a bouquet of lilacs between her legs. And Harrelson as Flint says, well, quit futzing around with the flowers and just take the... Yeah! And he just does the whole thing, which is the first time I'd ever heard that used in a film because I had seen it used in print. It seems to be more of an East Coast word. But I wondered if we were taking it to the next level, if we were expanding on the previous usages of that word. So forth. Second person asking if you're drunk. No. She's just happy to be here. You're intoxicated by life and charm and... and the glory of a fresh new day.
Why would they ask that?
I can't imagine. Okay, at the news desk, here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Well, be careful what you buy secondhand, Rick Emerson, because you never know what's lurking inside. A Richmond, Virginia man learned that lesson early Wednesday morning when a snake slithered out of a chair he had received nearly a week earlier. Barrett Edwards said he was in bed watching TV inside his home on Wednesday morning when he got up to use the bathroom. Upon exiting the bathroom, he saw a boa constrictor coiled up on top of a bathroom vent.
Jesus.
I turned around and there was a snake right there, Edwards said. He says he watched the snake for a couple of minutes to figure out what he was going to do. Then he called for his mother, because I guess he lived with his mother.
How old is he? Does it say?
No, it doesn't say. Ran downstairs and called 911. Richmond police officers arrived at the home and put the snake in a pillowcase. Police believe the snake had been hiding in the coils of a chair a friend of Edwards had recently given him. Police returned the snake, named Buddy, to its owner, who says he plans on returning it to a pet store. In Virginia, it's a Class 2 misdemeanor to allow a reptile that is not native to the Commonwealth to escape.
And so but did you say how far away the owner of the snake lived? Like, had the snake traveled next door or like 10 miles or?
No, they didn't say, but he gave the guy a chair not knowing there was a boa constrictor.
And he got in through a vent?
Apparently it crawled out of the chair and then went into the bathroom onto a worm vent.
So it makes you wonder how it got into the chair. It seems like you would notice if a boa constrictor was trying to, you know, like knocked at your door.
Well, I guess the guy, he says they returned it to the owner who said he planned on returning it to a pet store. So I'm thinking that the guy had the snake. The snake disappeared about the same time that he gave the guy the chair.
Ah,
and never put two and two together.
I see. I understand. So it was sort of an inadvertent door prize for having the chair. All right. Fair enough. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us here. It's Don Taylor.
Donald Trump is supposed to meet today with a state lawmaker from Arizona who's sponsoring a so-called birther bill. Trump has questioned whether President Obama was born in the United States. Trump says it doesn't matter if people remember Mr. Obama growing up. No, it doesn't matter if people remember Mr. Obama growing up as a kid in Hawaii or elsewhere.
If he was 3 years old or 2 years old or 1 year old and people remember him, that's irrelevant. You have to be born in the country. There's no birth certificate. There's only a certificate of live birth, which is a totally different thing and a much, much lower standard. There are no hospital records.
I'm so glad that he's doing this. This is just...
Isn't a certificate of live birth the same thing as a birth certificate?
I don't believe so. That's the thing. And I don't really know, but it seems like there's some sort of legal distinction there. That is the tiny like cracked core of this entire that is the cracked acorn that has given birth to this like insane oak that he was secretly born on the moon or something, and then he was brought here by winged elves.
You started to say winged monkeys, didn't you? And then you changed your mind.
No, because they wouldn't be on the moon.
Oh, all right, sorry.
I mean, not that Barack Obama would be on the moon, but no.
No. Okay.
Are there moon monkeys?
I don't know. I just thought, I honestly thought for a second, you started to say winged monkeys, and then you thought, oh, you don't want to say monkey in, conjunction with the president. So you
Why is that,
yourself.
Don?
Because people might construe it as racist when it's not really. It's just, a thing about monkeys.
When I start talking about Barack Obama, you go right to monkeys. I was saying elves.
I think about monkeys all the time, though. You don't understand. Uh-huh. I've always got monkeys going in my brain in one way or another.
No, I understand.
Monkeys.
Sure.
Monkeys.
No, monkeys. I get it. No. I think we all understand. Anywho, I don't know what we're talking about now. But I think that is the flawed core on which this whole great crazy house is sort of, it all rests on that. That I think that there is, I mean, I don't know, but I think that there is the guy said early on when this all first happened, I think the guy said, well, there's the certificate of live birth, which is I don't know, which is you were born, but then there's the thing of filing with the state. I think they said it was a civil union marriage thing where it was they were basically the same thing, but one was for home births, I think was the core, the way that this originally started, and one was if you were born at a hospital. And so if you were born at a hospital, you got a birth certificate. If you were born at home, there was a certificate of live birth, but then you had to come in and register the kid, baby, and go, hey, my wife and I, looky here, we had a baby. And then they went, here's your certificate of live birth. And also, by the way, here's her birth certificate. And I think I could be wrong, but I think that was the deal. So there are the two things. But what's great about this, though, is that this whole thing of Trump getting on the bandwagon of let me see the birth certificate is awesome, because it's a total Rorschach story. Because Trump himself has said that he believes that Obama was born here. That's the thing. He's he has never... He makes no bones about it. He doesn't dispute that Obama was born in Hawaii. He claims, if you see him interviewed at length, that he does believe it, but he wants to force the issue to get it off the table. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I think it's just another way for Donald Trump to sort of, just to get his mug on television. But depending on where you see him interviewed, if you just hear him excerpted, or if you just hear an edited down version of the soundbite, like this one that we just played,
If he was 3 years old or 2 years old or 1 year old and people remember him, that's irrelevant. You have to be born in the country. There's no birth certificate. There's only a certificate of live birth, which is a totally different thing.
And so there's that. So it just sounds like he's, he's some crazy sort of, George Bush blew up, the World Trade Center guy. But if you see him interviewed sort of, in a more complete fashion, he'll say that it's because he just wants to remove it as an item that the Republicans can sort of bring up. And I don't know which of those is true. Again, probably neither of them. I'm just for whatever keeps it front and center, because it's fantastic. Because it's just because it's like a, I mean, it's like a sideshow within a sideshow within a sideshow.
Well, one of the scary things is there was a thing I read this morning. CBS and one of the major polling services did a fairly extensive poll and polled Republicans. And Mitt Romney is by far the favored Republican candidate right now. Number two, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
More people would like to see Donald Trump run for president now than Palin, or McCain or any of these other people that are actually, what is considered actual, presidential material.
Well, they are elected leaders.
Yeah. But I mean, number two, Donald Trump.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of those things where it's just happening in a vacuum, in a void, because nobody.
Would you like to see Donald Trump run for president? Sure. Why not?
I think it's because they realize of the three people you just listed, of McCain and Palin and Romney, they know one of them is crazy. One of them will never, ever be elected. And the other one is just a blank. I mean, Palin's nuts. McCain is 1,000 years old and has no chance, because I can't imagine that he would ever seriously run again anyway. And Mitt Romney is just Mitt Romney's just some, like, generic white guy. I mean, he just is like some Bob Dobbs-looking bastard who just sort of sits there and just kind of goes, well, okay, you know, and just let's go fishing. And, he just seems like some guy that calls you sport, you know, and kind of like he's the boss that maybe comes by the office, you know, like once every couple of weeks. You know, kind of flies in and goes, well, just like to see how the operation's going, fellas. You know,
he's got the big floppy comb over and he smells too strong of aftershave.
Yeah, you know, he's awash in Vitalis and, you know, and just evil. And but you don't really know anything about him. Like, he's just like a 50s dad that you sort of see lurking in the background. Like, I don't think anybody really, and he's named after a catcher's glove. So, you know, he's not going to be president. But there's this total void, and into the vacuum steps a known quantity. And Americans love a brand name. They love a known quantity. I would bet if you were going to rank those four that it would be probably Trump, Palin, and then probably a toss-up between Mitt Romney and John McCain, probably because the age washes out the known quantity factor. But that is probably solely on name recognition. I'm surprised that Michelle, what's her name, Crazy Michelle Bachmann is on the list. Because, I mean, she's somebody that gets on camera frequently enough that she must be known. So I hope that the whole birth certificate thing continues, which it probably will, because the Obama people, their whole take is like that we're not going to do some Geraldo thing where we like go. Somebody should totally do that, where they just show up like with a camera and they just open like the secret of a Barack Obama's vault, you know. And then inside there's just like a bottle and there's no birth certificate.
But that flies out.
But they're not going to do that because as much as it would make the issue go away, they just don't. Their whole thing is that even if 30% of the Republicans think that he was secretly born somewhere else, they know that probably 30% of Americans are deeply stupid or unplugged from the media and haven't even heard about this, and they don't even want to bring it to their attention. Plus, you don't want to send the implicit message to the Republicans that if they just bitch about something enough or that they just make something up and stick to it, that eventually you'll have to deny it. You know, so that Barack Obama killed Jesus. And if they just like hang on that long enough, that you'll have to like find a video of like where you were the night that Jesus was killed, or you'll have to produce, you know, like, no, I have an alibi. I was at the movies when the Romans nailed Jesus to a tree. It couldn't have been me. So that's why they won't address it. So it's this fantastic, like, irresistible force, immovable object thing where the Republicans won't let go because he won't answer it. And he won't answer it because he doesn't want to make anybody aware of it that isn't already aware of it, which means. So the glorious upshot of all of this is that the whole he wasn't born here, he was born here, he wasn't born here, he's from the moon thing could be going on as we enter the actual presidential election cycle in 2012, which would just be fantastic. Because you know that somebody who has no real chance of winning, like Michelle Bachmann, will just get out there in the campaign trail and just begin and just start like dropping he wasn't born here stuff like all the time. Somebody told me the other day that like Reagan never showed anybody his birth certificate, that there were questions about whether or not Reagan was born here. So, and I don't even care if it's true. That's just a thing that I'm going to choose to believe.
Well, Nixon was born at home. I mean, so did he have a honest-to-God birth certificate, or did he just have something signed by a doctor?
I don't think the wolves that suckled him when he was born were able to sign their own names. I don't know. He was born in a mud hut somewhere in Yorba Linda. So, you know, I don't know. Yeah.
Back in September, a couple in Japan alerted police after discovering what they believed to be a corpse while they were walking their dog. The body had been wrapped in a sleeping bag and bound around the neck, waist, and ankles. A head of black hair protruded from one end of the bag. Police retrieved the body and launched a criminal investigation, but several hours later, when forensic pathologists began to unwrap the corpse to perform the postmortem, they realized it was a state-of-the-art sex doll. It was like one of those.
Like a real doll?
Like a real doll. Seeing themselves as victims of a prank, the authorities vowed to track down the perpetrator and charge him with interfering with police business. Who they found was a man, a 60-year-old unemployed resident of the Izu prefecture, who had wrapped his silicon girlfriend in a sleeping bag, drove to a remote wooded area, and dumped her. He lived with the doll for several years after his wife had passed away and then decided to part with her after making plans to move in with one of his children.
The doll got uppity.
He said, it seems he grew attached. The chief investigator said, it seems he grew attached to the doll over the years. He was confused about how to get rid of her. He thought it would be cruel to cut her up in pieces and throw her out with the trash. So he proceeded to dump her illegally.
Well, I can see that. I mean, if you're some guy that does develop a, well, look, I mean, let's just be honest. As demonstrated by the film Mr. Mom, boys in their whoobies can be, and that's just a blanket. That's just like a towel or something. That doesn't even really look like anything. So the idea that if you're a grown man who does then develop some unnaturally intense attraction to a thing that looks human, I can see, and the thing does look so creepily real, I can see why it would be weird to be running it through a buzzsaw or a shredder or something, or just sticking it in the trash.
And I guess it would seem weird to just, like, give it or sell it to someone else.
Yeah, I mean, and I can't imagine anybody's really going to buy that.
Oh, please.
Maybe in Japan.
Sex doll.
Maybe. But the idea of just taking it, binding it, and dumping it into the woods is a little strange. I'm surprised he didn't have a faux funeral. That's my thing. It's like, I'm sorry, he didn't have a little service. Like a sort of goodbye, Mr. Fish kind of a thing where they just sort of gathered around a hole and, whatever.
Well, the man he regrets that the doll was mistaken for a corpse and he faces fines for violating Japan's waste management law.
Well, yeah, because then you're just dumping silicone or whatever in the woods. All right. It is the Rick Emerson, the radio program. Somebody says, speaking of snakes, ask Dawn if she checked her email to a – speaking of snakes, ask Dawn if she checked her email for a link to the video of a snake biting a model.
We actually covered this story
a while ago. She was bitten in the bosom
by
a snake. But did we have video of it?
I don't know.
So apparently he sent you a video of this happening. This is a thing that I guess was captured on film or whatever. So
at the time I remember there was video of it. She was handling the snake on television, I guess.
Handling the snake on television.
And that was when it bit her on the boob or whatever.
On the boob or whatever.
And so
this is we'll post this. How long is the
not long. There she is. She's like, oh, I've got a snake, and I'm sticking my tongue out at it because I'm creepy.
All right. So she's holding
the
snake.
Oh, maybe this is a different story. Maybe this snake will bite her on the tongue.
Is there? No. He says no. He knows that it bites her on the bosom.
Oh, I wish it had bitten her on the tongue.
All right. So she's like a model or something? Who is this? Is it?
Yeah, she's a model.
She's holding the snake in a.
She looks like a porn actress, though. Yeah, she doesn't really look like a model.
She's doing the. She's doing the sexy hold on the snake.
The snake.
All right. How long is this? Are we near the end?
I hope so. Oh, God. She's making sexy faces. Are those really sexy faces?
No.
No.
Well, I suppose it's all relative.
Okay. So now she's like showing off her boobs. Oh, wait. I think we just missed it. There we go. She's licking the snake again. And she's going, oh, it's sexy. And the snake says, ah! There we go. Snake said, no, thank you. Do not want.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that might be worth posting.
And now it's dangling off of her.
All right. So we'll get that put up. So thank you to whoever it is that sent that in. So much appreciated. Is there a name on whoever
says,
it is?
It says model bitten by snake on her breast during photo session.
But for the listener who sent it, is there do you know the name of the guy?
I do. It was from listener Paul.
Okay, so Paul, thank you. So we'll get that posted up. So there you go. Well, let's do one more here. We'll take a break and come back on the other side of this here.
Let's do our clown watch.
Here's your clown watch for, Friday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
A local man who once worked as a clown and volunteered with scouting groups has pleaded guilty to making and possession of child porn, as well as sexually assaulting a minor.
Of course.
Randy Edward Miller, 40, appeared in front of Justice Stephen Hunter in provincial court in Napanee, Ontario, on Thursday to face two counts of possession of child pornography, one count of making child pornography available, and one count of sexual assault involving a minor. The details on the sexual assault are subject to a publication ban to protect the victim. Miller worked as a clown for 17 years, volunteered for a local beavers group for 10 years, I guess that's a scouting thing, and attempted to adopt a child in 2002. Miller was arrested on the three child pornography-related charges on October 7th following an international police sting called Project Sanctuary. The sting led to the shutdown of an online child exploitation and image trading network.
Do we know his clowning name?
No, sadly. I can't find a clowning name. They confiscated his computer, a computer at his mother's house, and found approximately 60,000 pornographic images of children between the two computers. Many of those were images of boys 3 to 5 years old. Police intercepted an internet discussion with another member of the network in which Miller said he, quote, liked young boys. They also seized a model of a child's penis.
All right.
So,
you know, here's what I thought. We talk a lot about clowns on the show and how, you know, and just the, and even the non-molesty ones.
Oh, wait, I found his name. During his career as a clown.
Mr. Bungo.
He used the names Hunker the Clown, Randolph the Balloonologist, and Poppy, Santa's Balloon Elf.
Okay. Those are all really, really disturbing, especially because they indicate that he was, he had exhausted the alibiing possibilities of one name and moved on to another.
Yeah, in a 2002 interview about being a clown, he told a local newspaper, "For me, it's about seeing the kids and seeing their faces. I love seeing them smile."
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll just. There you go. So we talk so much about clowns on the show. You know what would be interesting is even the clowns who are not, you know, like arrested for something societally reprehensible. I'd be curious to know if there's a psychological profile of clowns, of somebody who just like what kind of person. I mean, even if you're a law abiding clown, what sort of person becomes a clown? There's got to be some sort of a psychological profile of the person to whom that is an attractive career. It's not like it's a thing that I would do. You know,
no.
I mean, it's like, you know, and, you know, and it's, you know, I have a job somewhat in the public eye and that is, you know, sort of kooky and performance based. But, you know, being a clown is like there's that whole thing of using the grease paint, sort of obliterating your own identity, you know, and then becoming someone else and becoming a specific kind of fictional person.
Yeah. So
there's got to be some sort of a profile or some psychological commonalities among the people who would do that. I'm trying to say, somebody just sent me a message that this sounds very similar to a clown story we had a few years ago, and he was asking if you had ever heard it, and I don't think you have. We had a story a few years ago about a British dentist who did some moonlighting as a clown. So he was a dentist. I mean, he was a dentist and a clown, which just seems like you're asking for all kinds of trouble there. And then he was arrested at one point for engaging in activities, I think, that were so non-sexual activities at that, that were so upsetting to us that on the air, like, took the story and ran it through a shredder so that we couldn't read it again. But now I feel the urge because the guy's saying, this sounds like that guy who was the dentist in Britain. Has Dawn heard that story about that clown? And so now I'm going to try to find it, see if I can maybe do it later on.
Oh, good.
It's so bad. I think we actually made some sort of a vow that we would never read it again because it was so upsetting to everybody. But I'll see if I can find it again. All right, there's your clown watch. Let's do one more, and then we will break after this. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Police in Mesquite, Texas, are reviewing a case involving an officer who pepper sprayed a baby squirrel outside of Kimbrough Middle School.
Who pepper sprays a baby squirrel? Who breaks a butterfly on a wheel? Okay.
The incident happened Wednesday while several students watched in horror and caught the situation on camera. Video of the incident, posted on YouTube, shows a man identified as Officer Davis standing over the squirrel and using pepper spray to subdue the baby animal. According to Sergeant West Halley of the Mesquite Police Department, the squirrel had been behaving erratically in the moments before what is shown in the video. Police were concerned that the squirrel may have been rabid and said that it chased down a few students before the pepper spray incident. Still, in the video, several shocked students can be heard screaming and pleading with the officer to show mercy on the squirrel.
He believes that the squirrel was really just like asking for it, though.
Yeah.
The squirrel was presenting a clear and present danger to him.
Yeah. A parent contacted a local news crew about the incident, saying that the officer and the school's principal both took part in causing injury to a baby squirrel who posed no harm to students by kicking and spraying it with mace. The parent went on to say the incident caused some pain for the children to see. These adults should not get away with using mace like that around all those kids for no reason, the upset parents said. The principal that kicked and injured this harmless animal should be ashamed of himself. And then an update on the story. The squirrel is still alive. School administrators called Mesquite Animal Control, and a technician picked it up and cleaned the pepper spray off of it before returning it to the wild.
Oh, that's adorable. And now it walks tall among the other squirrels because it has a fantastic story to tell about facing off against man and living to tell the tale.
But it's so angry. Very, very angry.
Well, I love the idea, though, that, like, first of all, it seems like you'd have to lure the squirrel in. Like, even getting them to eat, you know, like, if you want to eat them out of your, have them eat out of your hand or something, they're not that afraid of mankind, but they still won't run right up to you. It takes them a second to go, like, Well, looks like a peanut. Hold on a sec. I mean, it seems like he almost would just have to lay there and go, who wants some pepper spray? And just sort of, you know, and just sort of like, you know, make friends with the squirrel even to get it close enough to spray.
Yeah, I've seen squirrels act kind of crazy and aggressive to taunt, you know, cats and dogs and stuff. But first of all, baby squirrel. And seriously, how much of a threat did you really think the thing was?
Well, let me ask you this about baby squirrels. I've asked that question before about, like, where do squirrels live? And somebody finally sent me the answer to that. And apparently there is a specific kind of nest that squirrels build that is, in fact, it is called a hutch. It just says rabbit, but it's a different kind of hutch, obviously. But it's a specific kind of nest. It is in trees, but it is actually so low into the whatever the crotch of the branches that it can't actually be seen, which is why my whole thing of like, well, you look in the trees, you see birds' nests, but you never see a squirrel's nest. What is up with that? Apparently, they're built so low and so compactly you can't actually see them.
Or in the case of the house I lived in North Portland, they'll like just move into like the attic space over your back porch and remodel, apparently, just slamming things and splintering crap and making pounding noises all day long.
Up all hours of the night. But I had said, you know, like, because you ever see the nest. And the thing that nobody had ever really clarified, though, is the idea that you never see the baby squirrel either. I don't think my whole life I've never seen a baby squirrel, which presumably you would know because it would be hairless, for one thing.
It would be
tiny.
Yeah.
And so, like, where did a baby squirrel? It seems like there was something more to the story than we're being told anyway, because that would.
It may have fallen out of the tree and it was scared. And so it was running around and then everyone freaked out. And then
so he's not only angered the squirrel, he's angered the squirrel parents as well.
Yeah.
So really, mankind is going to be paying a severe price for this.
I'm hoping that he's angered the entire squirrel community and he will just like wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and see like 40 squirrels looking in his bedroom window.
Let's have no illusions about this, by the way, that squirrels do know. They know how to screw with you, because there's a squirrel that lives in our front, and it's the same squirrel because he's got this telltale black stripe that is on one side of his body that sort of almost like he's wearing a belt around his midsection, but it only goes halfway. So it's the whatever that is, the radius or whatever. But he'll be out there, and Max will, you know, go out to the front yard, and Max immediately, you know, he's just look at all of this property I own, and he's just there like Yertle, just like surveying his territory, and you know, look at these many humans who work to, you know, to bring me, Max, food every day, fools. And then, but then the squirrel will immediately chatter at him, like through this fence that we have to keep Max from, you know, going out and just sort of ravaging the neighborhood. And the squirrel will give you that sound or whatever. And Max will just like lunge at him. And the squirrel, here's how you know that he's just screwing with him, because the squirrel won't like run away or go all the way up the tree. He'll just get a few feet off the ground. Like, it's what's weird is
they know exactly how far away to get.
That's the thing, is it's like he knows almost how high Max would be able to reach up the tree if Max were on his hind legs scrabbling, like walking on two legs. It's like he's just like 6 inches higher than that. And then he'll just sit there and I swear to God, he'll look at him and he'll make eye contact with Max and just go, and just sort of like do his like squirrel noise at him. And Max just sits there and just seethes, just like incandescent with rage. And it's like you can just, and Bella probably does this too, but you can just hear the thought process of like, someday when I get thumbs, I swear to God, I'm coming for your tree with a chainsaw. I mean, there's like some sort of nature face-off happening right there.
Well, then they get angry. The squirrel, when we had a house with a yard, the squirrels would climb, like run back and forth along the fence. And Bella would run out there and like do that whole, oh, I hate you, squirrel, barking thing. And the squirrel would like be in a tree. And there was this one tree that the squirrel couldn't quite jump far enough to get from the tree to the fence. So the squirrel now would become enraged and would be doing that chattering, like yelling at the dog from the and Bella's going, bark, 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 bark. And I'm just standing on the back porch going, okay, everyone just shut up. Just Bella, no, Bella, get. You know, and as soon as Bella would come like halfway through the yard, the squirrel would go, ha ha, freedom, and take off. Because the squirrel just knows exactly how far into the yard it can come, how far up the fence it needs to go, how high up the tree. They're freaky smart that way.
By the way, in case you're playing the home game of what tiny things is Philo afraid of this week, we've now determined that he's afraid of apples as well. Because Larva's packing her bag to go to work, and she has this sort of cloth bag that she puts her lunch in, and she has like the sandwich and the whatever, and then she will either take like an orange or a banana or an apple. And the apple had fallen out of her bag at one point. She didn't realize it till later. And Max was like still in the bedroom. And so there's this apple sitting in the in our house. The apple is sitting in the doorway that leads from the bedroom to the living room. So it's just – and it's not doing anything. It's not like the apple was walking around or clutching a zip gun or something. The apple is just sitting on the floor, on the carpet, in the doorway of the open door. And so, you know, I call Father. I'm like, hey, you know, wake up, time for breakfast or whatever. And he comes running out of the bedroom and he's down the hall and he sees the apple and he just skids to a halt. And then he gets really, really low to the ground and he kind of stares at it for a long while. And then he kind of gets really, really, really close, like he did with like one of my shoes or something at one point. And he kind of gets really, really close, just close enough to sniff the apple, but he misjudges and he touches it with his nose, and then he just yelps and runs away. I had to actually like get rid of the apple and remove it from his line of sight altogether before he would leave the bedroom because he just stood in the bedroom peering around the door, like looking to see if the big angry red thing was still blocking the hallway. So there you go.
Oh, Philo.
Somebody says, I can tell you're both professional broadcasters. You both do excellent squirrel voices. Yeah, that's what we do, sir. It's one of the many benefits of listening to the Rick Emerson Show.
When Rick and I were talking about doing this show, in fact, that's how he auditioned me.
My squirrel voices all sound like Brian Brown, though, unfortunately. All right.
Mine all sound French.
We're back after this. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Thank you. for his parole. Took the life of James the Outlaw, which he snuck up on and stole. No one knows just where they came to be misunderstood, but the poor Missouri farmers knew that Frank and Jesse do the best they could. Keep on riding, 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 Frank and Jesse James. Keep on riding, 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 till you clear your names. Keep on riding, 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 across the rivers and the range. Keep on riding, 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 Frank and Jesse James. James.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Now you
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's Friday. Coming up here just a bit, we'll do the top five today. The top five songs from, I believe it is, October 19th, 1983. And it is, let me just see if it's entirely dreadful. Bad, 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 good, great. Okay, so you got a good, you got a great, you got four bads. I mean, really, you know, it's par for the course. I mean, no worse than usual, I would say. So that's coming up later on. We got we got a penis watch, yes, corpse watch,
yes.
All right. Anything else? I got this whole thing about sharks, but that'll probably have to wait until next week. I got this thing about sharks and this thing about my mom, but we don't have time to talk about that. So there's some stuff we'll have to put off till Monday, but we'll get to the top five and probably the penis watch and the corpse watch. That is all on the way. All of it brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to SquiresElectric.com. That is their website, SquiresElectric.com, or you can call 503-252-1609. That's 503-252-1609. You know what we should do at some point? Because I get a lot of, when I mention... what's his name? Bright-eyed and bushy-tailed young Ben. When I mention him as being the guy who has the Battlestar Galactica tattoo, I get, I would say, a fair number of women and not a few men who inquire about, you know, tell me more about this attractive Ben fellow with the Battlestar tattoo. And they want to know, like, what it is, where he got it, like, why he got it. You mentioned his girlfriend the other day, and there was some discussion about whether she was a fan and whether he had it when he got there. I think what they're basically asking, they haven't really put it this way, is it possible to have a giant Battlestar Galactica tattoo and then still get a girlfriend? I think is.
And apparently it is. It is indeed.
That's the question that's implicit in some of the emails. But we ought to have him
not
on at some point to talk about it.
A girlfriend who makes you like lasagna and cobbler.
That's what I'm saying. And as Dante Hicks would say, you know, most girls don't make you lasagna, though. It's true. So we'll have him on at some point. I mean, we should, you know what we should, oh my God, we should totally rotate through the Squires employees because we've had Joe Squires on to talk about nuclear reactions and, you know, the big ocean. We could have Ben on to talk about Battlestar Galactica. Donna could come on, talk about penises.
Well, if you go to SquiresElectric.com, right there, there's a picture of the Squires Electric family.
Of the whole crew,
there's
as it were?
Donna and Joe, and I guess that's Ben. And then a couple other guys.
So they, too, have their story. Yeah. So we could actually rotate through and just find out what makes each of them a unique snowflake.
Yes, exactly.
All right. In the meantime, you can contact them at 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And as I noted earlier in Legion of News, there was that whole thing this morning where a bunch of the sections of town had a little power outage. Where it's, and I got to tell you this, oh my God, you want to talk about it just where you realize that how little you understand about electricity and electronics and how things actually... and even, you know, and it's not because my family didn't try. Like when I was a child, my Uncle James gave me, he had this great series of books, which I think has now been sort of obviated by the internet, but it was this great series of books called The Way Things Work. It was like this huge, not even, it was not for children either. It was just this massive collection of books. It was like, they looked like those Chilton auto manuals, but it was just, it was literally just explanations and not schematics, but explanations and diagrams of just how mechanical and electronic devices of all varieties operated. And it would have things like, you know, a car, but it would also have like a pencil sharpener. And it would not just any pencil sharpener, like the little kind you carry in your pocket. I'm talking about the kind at school where it has the two whirling sort of cylinders inside that have the strange sort of pinstriping that's all swirly. And I mean, that thing is like... And that thing's existed since, like, 1915. But how dumb am I? I mean, I couldn't put that thing together. You put a gun to my head, and this is some guy 100 years ago, you know, probably still going home for a leeching every now and again when he felt under the weather, and he's inventing a thing that I couldn't make now. You just gave me an infinite amount of time. So there's a whole world of people smarter than me and you. So some of them work at Squires Electric, so you can contact them at 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. That is 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. If you do not understand the ways and means and whys and wherefores and where-hows of electricity,
and
they
why
do.
Would you?
And why would you really when you've got that? I mean, really, if you know how the phone... You don't even have to know how the phone really works. You just need to know how to use it. And then, you know, your electrical problem's solved. Somebody said, by the way, David McCauley wrote the Way Things Work books. He wrote an... I love our audience. That dude wrote an awesome book about castles, too. His pencil drawings were off the hook when I was in second grade, yo. God bless you, listener Jeremy. God bless you indeed. No, no, I can attest to that. They were indeed off the hook. They were mind-boggling. And you were like, and plus, that's the other thing about this series of books, The Way Things Work. I almost want to get that guy in there. He's probably dead. Because those books came out, I don't know, like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But it is sort of astounding because, you know, he did these books himself. So it was like this huge-ass encyclopedia book, and it would be, again, it would be like, a power drill, or I don't think they had microwaves, but it'd be like, or a lawnmower, or, you know, a battery, and how did it work? And then he would have an explanation, and then he would have these pen and ink drawings of just how the thing actually worked. And he drew all those by hand. I mean, you know, he had, like, you know, rulers and the protractor and whatever, but it wasn't like it was a computer-generated, it wasn't like he had an X-ray of the thing.
Right.
It was really astounding, and the fact that just some guy knew all that stuff and they was able to draw it is really just mind-boggling.
And could make these things simple to understand to people like you and me.
And probably could have just made these things if he'd had to.
Yeah.
Like if he just said, make me a pencil sharpener right now, Mr. Smarty Man, he probably could have done that. Here's like how stupid Rick is, like volume 749,312. When I was in school, I used to just take the lid off the pencil sharpener and just sit there and slowly turn the handle and watch the whirling cylindrical blade thing sort of intermeasure and just go, how in the F did you, how did anybody ever make this?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, and like, how does it work? And I mean, watching it work, I couldn't figure out how it worked. So
I used to do the same thing with chain link fences. I'd sit in my backyard and just stare at the chain link fence. First of all, if you stare at a chain link fence long enough, you can see a lion face.
And you lose your depth perception goes off.
But also just you start getting that thing where you look at it long enough, you start going, who figured out that they could just take wire and do that back and forth and make that? How do they do that?
Where does the loop start and stop?
And then you see one of those shows, like that thing with John Ratzenberger, where they go to like the chain link fence factory and you see the machine that makes it, and it's still kind of magical. It's sort of freaking amazing.
Well, it's like, do you ever look at your clothing really closely and you see that it's just like a series of loops encircling other loops? And you go like, wow, I'm stoned, I think is what you say. But you go, wow, how do they do that?
I've never been able to figure out how the sewing machine works. That you thread the needle and the needle goes down, and then there's the other piece of thread underneath and the bobbin, and it comes up. And I've never ever been able to figure out how they end up interlocking.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense.
No, and it's like, well, and as the needle's going down, does the needle turn around on the bottom?
No,
and
it does. It just keeps going up and down, so it doesn't make any sense. How does that happen?
It seems impossible.
It does.
I bet it's maybe it's magic.
I think it might be.
I mean, maybe you just open it and there's just glowing light inside.
Or elves.
Yeah, and there's just nothing. I mean, the other thing, it doesn't even seem like it can work, and yet it does. Okay.
We're stupid, aren't
we? Hey, David McCauley's still alive, still writing books, says somebody else. I'm totally going to get that guy on the show. That'll be like a follow-up to the Don Rawich, the Oregon Trail guy. I'm going to get the Way Things Work guy on and just tell him he's freaking awesome. All right, excellent. And this is all true. There you go. Squires Electric.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. And whatnot. Still to come, we got your top five and corpse, penis, all that. Don't forget, after a brief musical interlude at the end of today's broadcast, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. And our very own Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler could be seen around 4 o'clock today over at trailblazers.tv for another brand new episode of Sportlandia. So you want to be watching that. Mr. Big Jim Willig will return next week with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Today he's at home just covered in phlegm. So there you go. All right, at the news desk, it's worth the thing. There we go.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, with the government budget still hung up over things like Planned Parenthood and the EPA, the government could, although it probably wouldn't, shut down for a few days. And there's a lot at stake if the federal government shuts down.
Is there?
There is.
Are we going to have sound bites?
Yes.
All right, hold on. Let me open the soundboard back up. I thought we were done with the sound bites for today.
No,
hold on
no,
a second.
No.
Let me just open this up. Hold on a second. This is the 8th. Let me get that open here for a second. All right. That was the Trump thing play that we were done. Okay, yeah, I'm ready.
Well, Americans' national parks would be affected if the government shut down, according to National Park Service spokesman David Barna.
And what is the name of this cut?
Budget 4.
Budget 4. Hold on a second. Wait. Hold on a second.
If he was 3 years older...
No, that's completely wrong. Hold on a second. For the love of God. That's why I gotta... This is my fault for trying to be too efficient. This is me for trying to just be... I'm trying to be too ahead of the game here, Don.
Yeah.
Trying to get things cleaned up and put away before the show's even done. All right. Budget 4.
All 394 national parks nationwide would close. That's about 84 million acres.
All right, that was really worth it.
Yeah, Barna says this would be a huge disappointment for tourists.
And for children.
We've been getting those calls for weeks now, even from overseas, of, gee, we have plane tickets, we have hotel reservations, should we continue to come? And we don't have a good answer.
It's a park. Just go there. I don't understand. What is the boggle?
Well, you know, they do. Well, it depends on
it's
the
like closing
park.
A lawn.
Many parks. If you're planning on camping, for example, you're supposed to like get a permit and go there. And there's people. Also, if you go someplace,
did Columbus get a permit?
If you go someplace like Yellowstone, there are hotels, and if they shut down and aren't paying anybody, and the hotel is just completely closed, there's no place for you to stay.
Well, except for the great wilderness and the outdoors, which is presumably the reason you're there.
Well, yeah.
Shut your yap and get a tent.
If you're staying at that fancy pants lodge, though, you obviously don't want to actually camp.
Yeah, I
camping's
guess.
For rubes.
I'm just saying. It seems like if you really, you know, if you're going to camp. You know, don't. There's no half measures. It seems like if you're going to experience the great outdoors, experience the great outdoors.
And I disagree. If I was going someday, I would like to see Yellowstone. And I want to see it on my own terms. I am going to stay at that Fancy Pants Lodge. I am not I could maybe go like as far as one of those kind of yurt things where they actually have beds and
it's
things.
Like an igloo or something.
But you bring your own sheets and pillows. But there's actually
isn't a yurt like a teepee or something.
It kind of is. They have at Yellowstone they have everything from like just sleep on the ground to places where RVs can park to these cabins that have cots that are with mattresses and things like that. You just have to bring your own sheets and stuff. And then they have the really, really nice.
I think Lara stayed in those. It's called a yurt. That sounds familiar. I think she and some of her lady friends stay in those when they go places.
Yeah, we have those yurts at a lot of our state parks here in Oregon. So even out at the beach, so you can go and you can rent one, and they're very cheap. They're like $20 or something, but it's like camping except they just provide sort of a roof over you.
I guess the thing, the closing of the park, it seems like it doesn't really affect me or in fact really anybody. So it just that's the thing that they always dangle when they talk about the because on the news in the newspaper yesterday, the front page of the Oregonian, they had a list of like what was going to be closing and what wasn't, and they noted that it was like unemployment, Medicare, Medicaid, in fact military benefits, all that stuff was just going to continue to be paid. Mm-hmm. And so they said the posted and mail's going to continue to be delivered, and they were
so
really
why
like,
should we be scared?
Well, that was like basically the article. They were like searching. I'm not saying there isn't anything, but they were like searching for something that was going to close that was really going to affect us. And so I guess maybe we're at.
You won't be able to go to the Smithsonian.
You won't be able to go, you know, toss breadcrumbs at sturgeon. I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like. So see Yellowstone now before it blows up, by the way. Hey, speaking of things blowing up and, and wreckage and disaster and nature and how it hates you. So I don't have any audio of this, but I do remember saying it. I guess it was back like in January or something. So I don't have the audio of this, but I'll sort of dig it up. The guy actually told me the date. So apparently, this is now what? So this is, we just turned into April. So it was in March when the Japan thing happened. So apparently in January, I was talking about Japan and large sections of Japan, like Tokyo, being, quote, the cities that are waiting to die because of their proximity to fault lines, and how we were, quote, let's see if the guy said, you said we were, quote, really overdue for a major earthquake and that tens of thousands would be killed. And so I guess I said that just a few weeks before the Tokyo thing happened. So I can't really take any credit for that because that's not really a thing that like I came up with. That's just some stuff that I'm repeating that like, you know, science is said. But it will be interesting to see if that sort of – if anybody kind of looks around and decides that maybe living on a fault line is not such a swell idea, that maybe, you know, maybe they'll relocate somewhere else. Because you think about it – and that wasn't even really Tokyo. I mean, Tokyo felt, you know, they felt, you know, the paintings on walls moved as far away as whatever. But, I mean, Tokyo's got – I mean, I think the population is just tens of millions of people live there. And it's all on top of one gigantic fault line. And
well,
so
we live on or near a fault line ourselves, don't we? I
not mean, the same way that they
the
do.
The Cascadia fault line come through here?
Well, I mean, theoretically, because the Earth is made of tectonic plates that are always moving, and because things have broken apart and come back together, you know, many, many, many times. I mean, you could sort of make that argument anywhere, but there's a difference between living in – there's a difference between living on a moving tectonic plate in Nebraska and then living like on the San Andreas Fault, I would imagine. Just like there's a difference, you know, between living somewhere where there's an occasional cold snap and like – you know, in the Arctic. But Tokyo is specifically the city that seismologists apparently refer to Tokyo as the city waiting to die. So that is a thing that I had repeated a few weeks before the earthquake happened.
I think I've probably told you this before. I moved here in November of 89, I think it was. And moved into this apartment in West Lynn. And I'd been here like 2 days when I was like in bed and 4 o'clock in the morning, everything started shaking. There was some enormous earthquake, and it was I thought I was moving here from the Los Angeles area. I honestly God thought I was moving somewhere where there were never going to be any earthquakes.
And when would that have been?
89, I guess.
Yeah, so it was before I was here.
Or 90, but yeah, and it was huge. And I realized now apparently it was, you know, an aberration, just a massive earthquake. But I was laying in bed, and my ex-husband / roommate was in the other room, and I'm laying there, and the bed just starts rolling and shaking, and I just yelled at him from the bedroom. I yelled, "Oh, come on!
Not even supposed to be here today."
Yeah.
Well, the thing about it is, I mean the voice of, you know, whatever. But really, the aberration is that the planet is safe for us to live on right now. I mean, because if you look at most of the time that the Earth has been in existence, like and really, if you look at I think most of the universe, I would say that a number so large as to be beyond our reckoning. In other words, like 99.9 repeating percent of the universe is not fit for us to live on. And that includes most of our own planet.
Well, really, the Earth is like a wet dog, and we are the fleas that it's trying to shake off.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we're like the mold that grows in the puddle in your basement, or the piece of bread you happen to leave out. And it's just because, like, the universe hasn't gone, did I leave that bread out? Oh, into the trash with that. Gone. So for the briefest of moments, we're sort of, you know, frolicking on this, you know, in this one tiny time. Well, because, like, Yellowstone, so the thing about Yellowstone is, you know, Yellowstone is all of yellow, like, the entirety of Yellowstone is above a giant volcano. I mean, that's what makes all the hot springs work in Yellowstone. Yellowstone, there's a you know, the caldera of a volcano, and at one point they knew that Yellowstone was the site of volcanic activity, and there's this great story about this guy who couldn't figure out where the caldera was, and he was like, well, I don't know, it should be around here somewhere, and he was like looking at like the heat and the steam and the way that things bubble and the way that, you know, the Earth sort of cracks and the way that the volcanoes and volcanic activity has moved around the Earth over the last 10,000 years or whatever, and he couldn't quite figure. He's like, well. Because somebody, a visitor had asked him, like, because he's like, well, you know, there's volcanic activity, you know, here in Yellowstone. And the woman said, ooh, well, where is the volcano? And he said, and apparently, no, like, nobody had ever asked where it was. And she said, well, where is the caldera, you know, the sort of center of the volcano? And he said, well, I don't know. And so he then spent years trying to figure it out. And no one could figure it out until at one point they flew over the park and realized the entire park was the caldera of a volcano. And that Yellowstone is directly over a volcano that is, wait for it, all together now, overdue to explode, and would explode. And if Yellowstone exploded with the force that is commensurate with the size of the volcano that lurks underneath and which pressure is building, it would actually be such a massive explosion that it would probably extinguish all life in North America. Enjoy your vacation.
Yeah. Also, as an addendum, I also just suddenly realized that when I was talking earlier about the yurts and the camping and the lodge and all of that stuff at Yosemite, at Yellowstone, I was really thinking of Yosemite.
I don't know the difference. Are they in two different places?
Yes.
I don't know where they are.
Completely different national parks.
What states are they in?
I don't know.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I thought that was the most ironic moment to play that.
Let's hear a penis watch.
Here's your penis watch. Finally, something we can speak about with authority. Here's your penis watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Here's Don Taylor with your penis watch.
Prominent New York attorney Salvatore Strazzullo has been called a cross between a bulldog and a chihuahua. In papers today in Brooklyn Supreme Court, he's also accused by former paralegal Desiree DiMartino of keeping her in a conference room while her one-year-old son was outside the door, exposing himself and masturbating to completion. The suit also charges that Strazzullo forcibly kissed the married DiMartino, placed his hands down her shirt, and groped her breasts. If that wasn't enough, Strazzullo allegedly also cut her salary and hours when she complained and then denied her vacations and holidays.
I wonder, no, this is... When I say this is so great, I don't really mean that it would be great if any of those things happened, but I mean in just in terms of story content. So I'm listening to all those things. So it's the groping her breasts, forcibly kissing, yeah, masturbating to completion, cutting pay and benefits. But I'm wondering in what order all those things happened.
Well, I think the thing is that he cut her salary in hours after she complained.
But I mean,
about the groping.
Do you start with the groping or do you start with the kissing, let's say? And then are you, and then is it after the groping and the kissing, is he then, hold on a second, and then it's like comes the unzipping?
Well, actually, I have sort of a timeline here.
Please, sure. Excellent.
Well, the fellow, just as some background, Strazzullo runs offices in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Staten Island, and Italy. He's known for representing celebrity and other high-profile clients. Some of his clients include Foxy Brown, Sylvia Minna, who sued Washington Redskins defensive tackle Albert Hainsworth, and Milana Dravnell, who filed a $25 million defamation suit against boxer Oscar De La Hoya. So in the lawsuit, DiMartino alleges she worked for Strazzullo from December 2004 to February 2011. During the summer of 2009, Strazzullo allegedly held DiMartino against her will for 10 minutes in a conference room at his Staten Island office. While blocking the doorway with his body, Strazzullo unzipped his trousers, exposed his penis, and masturbated to completion. DiMartino was screaming at Strazzullo to, quote, stop masturbating and to put his penis away and to let her out of the conference room. In 2010, Strazzullo allegedly struck again, this time in his Brooklyn office. He allegedly summoned DiMartino into his private office, locked the door, and approached her as if he were going to take documents she had been carrying. Instead, the suit says Strazzullo lunged at DiMartino, kissed her on the mouth, placed his hand down her blouse, and grabbed her breast.
I immediately call BS on this. This sounds like so much shenanigans. How much time is she saying passed between the first incident of the put your penis away and the, wait a minute, there's your penis again?
Like over a year.
And she's a paralegal in where? Manhattan?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's... I disbelieve almost everything about this story, because it seems like it's not like she was the cleaning lady and you know, and it's like I got to pay my rent, you know, it's like, you know, or she was just, you know, she has she has all the kids at the orphanage she's got to take care of. And so she needs this job. If you're a paralegal for a guy who's pretty high powered in Manhattan, you're able to get another job somewhere.
Yeah.
And especially if, you know, if you've got a year to look for that other... How many times did a guy really have to lock you in a conference room and wave his penis at you forcibly before you went, maybe I should look for another job somewhere? Probably, I would say once, that's when that would have to happen. Also, and somebody just says, how does a guy do that and not receive a big punch to the balls? That would be my other question. You know, if you feel you are being assaulted and you're willing to yell and scream, it seems you're probably willing to punch.
Well, I'm also... I have to say, I wonder how someone keeps you captive in a conference room while they are also masturbating to completion. I mean, there's a point during there where
you're distracted.
You ought to be able to just shove your way past him and get out of the room.
Probably this.
You know, his hands are busy. He's not at the top of his game as far as alertness is concerned.
Well, he's focused on other things.
That's a
brief window of time where there's no multitasking really possible. This is just my assessment. There's many things wrong with this story. There's many things here especially the whole quit masturbating, put your penis away. which sounds exactly like the sort of thing you would yell if you wanted someone in the hallway to hear it and go, I heard her yelling, quit masturbating, put your penis away. When is it like if a guy was like, you know, getting his, you just punch him in the throat or something. So,
yeah. I don't think you'd be that specific about it. You'd just say something.
Knock it off.
Knock that off.
Please, for the love of, it's revolting.
Get that away.
Oh, come on. So it seems as though that may be maybe some sort of romantic entanglement that that went off the rails at some point. All right. Well, there you go. So there's your penis watch for
Take a look at my
Friday.
Enormous penis.
Or else.
And my troubles start a-melting away.
Go look at it now.
I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
All right, then. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We got the top five still to do. What else? We got the do we have a watch of some kind?
We had a corpse watch.
How do you feel about doing that? Do you make the call. All right. Well
if we only have one story, do you want to hear the corpse watch or the naked guy with the AK-47 shooting at the robot?
Corpse watch or naked guy with AK-47? Hold on. Let me try to channel the wishes and whims and wills of the robot.
Okay. So we'll do that one. A Brevard County, Florida man blasted away with an assault rifle at a SWAT team robot while wearing nothing but his birthday suit. The suspect's dog was the only onlooker as the robot approached the door at the West Melbourne home on Delmar Circle. Authorities said the man had with several guns was suicidal and threatening authorities.
Okay, there must be video of this. Well, there's got to be video of this because there must have been a CB radio or, you know, the CB radio, the scanner.
There was a video on the robot. So whether or not they've released that and will allow
but
you to see it.
But the cops or the media must have heard about this when, like, hey, we've got a new man. He's shooting at the robot with a gun. Wouldn't you
Get
just be like,
there.
Holy crap, go film that now.
Lieutenant Bruce Barnett with the Brevard County Sheriff's Office said he'd shoot anyone he could. So instead of risking lives, deputies sent a $65,000 robot into the home. The robot has cameras which record all of the actions. The video shows the robot searching each room, its electronic eye roving from side to side while officers watch safely from a command post. As the robot slowly pushes the man's bedroom door open, the man comes out stark naked with an AK-47 and starts shooting at the robot.
It's fantastic.
The camera goes out at first, then comes back on. The robot came away with bullet holes, frayed wires, and broken cables, but no one was hurt. Barnett said that the robot saved a life. The man was charged with criminal mischief. The robot will be out of commission for a while. It is being sent back to its manufacturer for repairs.
And, I mean, so what have they initially gone to the house for?
Well, he was suicidal and threatening authorities.
Okay,
so
they just, you know, and then they saw the gun and they went, okay, no, hold on. This is a job for robot.
They knew he had guns and they said, let's send the robot in.
Okay, I believe I may have some video here.
Ooh.
Let me check here. Let's see. Okay, so I've got a still, at least, from the Associated Press. And they're blurring out his. Oh, he's a hairy man too. He's and they're blurring out his middle area there. But okay, they've released some stills from the robot going through the house. Here's a picture of the robot's arm opening a door.
Oh, he is very
Wait.
Furry.
Hold on. Okay, I've got. I'll let me watch this here, and then we'll. I'll post it if I can. Let's see if I can. Hold on a second. Let's see. Okay, so there's. Oh, wow. Okay, so there's actually a video of this that I'll get posted here in just a second, of the robot going into the house, opening the door. The dog is running away sensibly. The dog is saying, F this. I don't want any part of that.
How scared would Philo be of a robot?
Oh, God, you can't even, I mean, okay, so here's.
Poor dog. Just,
the robot's looking at the, oh, wow, there comes the AK-47. Do we get to see the gunfire? Okay, I'll get this posted here in just a second. I'm waiting to see if we get to see the actual gun. And then it just, oh, that's sort of sad, actually.
Yeah.
So here's what happens. So it's like you see the guy pointing the AK-47,
yeah.
And then it just goes to black. So I'm wondering if either they edited that part out or if, in fact, the robot actually just got taken out. But then it goes dim for a second, and then you see it fade back in, and you see the robot writing itself like the T-800.
Yeah.
Just sort of going, you know, I live again.
I am badass.
All right, that's
I love the beginning, though, with the dog going, uh-oh, and then just scampering away.
Seriously, there's just, like, no jerky worth it. All right, let's see. So how do I – why that – what is that? Is the check mark the embed? What the – the hell? Where's the link gone to this? Goddamn Associated Press.
Oh, yeah. Mother effers.
Okay, but if you click on it, the link just vanishes, or the actual URL just vanishes. What the hell? I hate people. All right. I think that's if you click on it, it's just – it's embedded there. All right. So I'm going to get that posted.
Oh, if you click on watch on YouTube, it'll take you to YouTube, and then you can get the shared link over there.
All right. So I'll get that put up at rickemerson.com here in just a second. So that's fantastic. So there you go. So often these stories – goddamn, what did we do without the internet? When you have a story like this, then you would just have to imagine what it looked like. But now, you know, you can actually see it. You can see the and that moment of the robot opening the door and the dog just running away tells you everything. Where it's like canine loyalty to man only goes so far. And then he's just like, this guy is nuts. I am not staying around for this.
Nope.
I don't think so. Sorry, you're on your own. All right, here you go. So, fantastic. I'll get that posted. Well, we should do the top five here. Okay. Let me play this. Yeah. Wait, there we go.
4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
Fantastic. All right, so I'm just getting this posted right now. Robot v. Naked Guy. Robot versus AK-47. Wielding. The video.
A great day for whoever worked at Associated Press, though, because you don't get to type up a headline with the words, you know, naked AK-47 and robot.
No.
All in the same sentence.
I would imagine that life at the Associated Press, I would imagine, is unbelievably dull and sad at this point. Except at, you know, moments like this, you know, where something really, really interesting happens. And then we had to start sending robots just to every crime scene. Doesn't matter. You know, doesn't matter what the crime is, doesn't matter what they're wanted for. We just send us a robot. All right, there you go. So you go to rickemersonshow.com. You can see Robot versus AK-47 wielding Naked Guy, the video. That's at rickemersonshow.com. All right, so this is a top five sort of de facto chosen by you. Because I was flipping back and forth, landed on a page, and then I had you select which, because I opened it to two pages, had you select which page, and you chose the right page, and then it was, I think it was the third week down. So this is October 29th, 1983, yes?
Yes, although right. I will say that if you thumb through the Billboard book, you will find that in most eras, particularly from the mid-60s forward, most top 40 music is terrible.
Yeah, it's
really hard to find a top five that doesn't have some just horrible stuff in it.
It's terrible, or at the very least, just vaguely embarrassing or shamefully dated at this point. All right, let's see.
We're starting with the honorable mention.
Yes, we'll start at number six. The honorable mention.
Oh, that would be Air Supply. Making Love Out of Nothing at All.
All right. Here's one of the... This is one of the two great songs on this top five. The other one is still to come. By the way, we should say that this is probably not the only time this has happened, but one of the few times this has happened. You got two songs in the top five by different artists written by the same guy.
I know just how to whisper, and I know just how to cry. I know just where to find the answers, and I know just how to lie.
So the last time I was in Vegas, Air Supply was playing at
and I know just how to scheme.
The Rio or something, or
I know just
the Stardust. But I very nearly went to see Air Supply. I mean, tickets were a little... They were just pricey enough that I wasn't going to go. I didn't... Because I'm basically... You're paying for two songs at that point.
They were here less than a year ago at Spirit Mountain Casino.
Yeah.
I remember thinking it might be cool to go see them.
Because you're basically paying to hear All Out of Love, Making Love Out of Nothing at All, and then Lost in Love. I mean, those are the three. But I just couldn't do it.
And I know the roads to riches, and I know the ways to fame.
thing about this song, it, you know, even though these guys are just, I mean, they just sound like a bunch, you know, they sound like a bunch of lispy Europeans. But
they're punces.
By dint of being, yeah, like they're just sort of, you know, mincing into the studio and, you know.
Big blonde-haired punces.
And just, I picture them with huge shellacked blonde hair helmets, just dazzling white teeth, and then for some reason I picture them dressed head to toe in, yes, white.
Yeah, I always imagine all of them looking like Michael St. Hubbins.
Totally. That's exactly what I'm picturing. Who was the Gib that died?
Was that Barry?
No, it was,
Tito?
Shemp. Robin?
Might have been.
Well, whatever. Anyway, but yeah, no, I picture them being the whitest, the lamest group of people on earth in terms of, but by dint of being written by Jim Steinman, it's got that sort of thing where I swear to God, it's like I picture myself like I'm in that sequence in Jerry Maguire where I'm just driving down the road with my fist in the air in triumph.
What is it about Jim Steinman that like every one of his songs sounds like some kind of, you know, epic riding on a greyhound.
On looking, a steed.
Looking out the as the rain is washing down the glass.
Here's the thing about Jim Steinman. Every song by Jim Steinman, while you're listening to it, sounds like the greatest song you've ever heard in your life.
If I could sing this at karaoke, everyone would think I was so awesome.
And the thing is, no one can sing Jim Steinman songs at karaoke. No one, and not even Meatloaf anymore.
No.
I mean, Sarah, did Sarah tell you about going to see Meatloaf a few weeks back?
And not only was it sad, but he just got angry at the audience for not appreciating him.
This is the best moment here. Big lift. There you go. That Bill and Ted guitar riff right there. And that they're singing about football. I mean, that's what's so ludicrous about it. I don't care who you are. That's awesome. That's just like as good as it gets. That is pop songwriting like at its very, very best. God, it's so great. I don't know why, and maybe there has been. Jim Steinman one time talked about making a musical where he just like, he crammed in like every song that he'd written for like other people, and he just found a way to stitch them all in together into one sort of Broadway epic, which... If you just took all of the Jim Steinman hits for other people and put them in one musical, I mean, it would be really like the great. They'd have to just close Broadway after that. It would be the best thing that had ever happened.
They did it with Billy Joel songs and with ABBA. Why couldn't they?
And with Queen.
And this would be better.
Yes. The great thing too about Jim Steinman is you see him now and he's clearly still crazy. He's just got this huge, long, like, Rasputin beard and this, like, crazy gray hair that goes to his waist. And he wears these big black elbow-length leather gloves when he plays the piano. And he's just nuts. He just looks like a Frank Frazetta drawing, sort of, like, of a wizard come to life. All right. It's hard to move on from that. But this is your top five from that week.
Number five, The Fix.
Well, now we're trending downward.
One thing leads to another.
Well, that was fun while it lasted.
But I like this song as a song that I'll hear on the radio every once in a while and enjoy without any nutritive value whatsoever.
But you enjoy it, but you realize it's useless.
Yeah. And then I feel no desire to ever hear it again until the next time it shows up on the radio.
Isn't the video that has two dogs licking each other?
I don't know.
Here's the thing about a band like The Fix. They are singularly faceless. I will give you $100. Not really. If you can name more than one member of The Fix.
It's also one of the songs that you don't know any of the words to the verses.
Yeah. It's just,
you can sing along with the chorus, but the verses are just a bunch of nonsense.
It's just to get you to this point. Also, because of the sort of weird staccato thing happened back then, it feels like a song that doesn't ever actually quite start.
Yeah. This
is what it would sound like if you left the Clash to sit and bleach out in the sun for like 50 years. I have no idea what he's saying. Until you pointed out, I realized I have no idea what any of the other lyrics are.
No.
Not even that I can't understand them, I've just never bothered to listen. Are there other songs by The Fix?
sure. I mean, you know, they toured and everything. I'm sure they had to sing something.
I realize also I've never listened past this point in the song because this part is brand new to me.
Let's do another.
What kind of voice does this guy have?
You see, everything is like up here in the top of his throat.
Kind of a Molly Hatchet sort of a thing going on there. Okay, let's keep.
Okay.
This guy's neither rough nor tough. These are the top five songs of October 29th, 1983, rather.
Number four, Spandau Ballet, True.
This is that song that people go, what? And then you hear it and you go,
yeah.
Okay, isn't Spandau like...
This is from the end of Pretty in Pink when Molly Ringwald is walking into the dance.
Wasn't Spandau like a concentration camp?
Yeah, it was. It was a prison in Germany.
Well, that seems like a bit of a buzzkill name. That's where you're really labeled with pink, not so much pretty.
It's where Ducky gives her his blessing, and she walks into the dance and sees Blaine. So true. Blaine comes over and dances, and then you feel really bad for Ducky. But then Ducky sees Christy Swanson, and she waves at him, and he goes, "Who, me?" And then you realize Ducky's gonna get a girl after all.
Did you hear Eric's top five yesterday?
Yeah, I did.
It was pretty awesome. This sort of reminds me of that. It's that thing that sounds so dated now, but because you view this through the prism of that movie in that time, you just can't help but,
you
know.
It just makes my heart swell up in my chest as soon as I hear that first da-da-da-da-da part, because it's just like...
There were no other, like, Spandau Ballet songs that we know of, right? I mean, like, they...
I'm pretty sure there were. I think they actually had a number of hits, didn't they?
I'm the worst guy in the world to answer that question. I don't know.
So the thing is, I didn't listen... This is the kind of music I absolutely did not listen to back at that time. So I have no idea. If it wasn't in a movie, I don't know.
This guy says, I thought it was OMD that was playing at the end of Pretty in Pink. You're a better person to answer than I am.
Maybe it was. Maybe I'm confusing it. I don't know.
Someone says, this song reminds me of that night I got an STD. Okay. Thank you, sir. And then my generation, of course, knows this as also the backing to Set Adrift on Memory Bliss by PM Dawn. A poor man's Tears for Fears, someone labels this. This does have that Tears for Fears sound to it. Is it possible that the two lead members of The Fix were named Joey and Johnny Fix with two X's?
That doesn't seem likely at all.
That is awesome. Oh, wow. Again, I've never listened this far in the song. The saxophone is taking me by surprise here.
They were, the band was originally called The Cut, with Gary Kemp and Steve Norman on guitar, later saxophone and percussion. They were both attending Dame Alice Owens School in Islington and were close friends.
Steve Norman, by the way, that's the name you give to the world's dullest man. All right. The top five songs from October 29th, 1983, Don Taylor.
Oh, God. Number three, Lionel Richie, All Night Long.
Yeah. So Lionel Richie, in some ways, is sort of like the black Phil Collins.
Yes.
You know, he was like, you know, a member of a really influential, legitimately great group, and then went solo and just became like the lamest, blandest thing on earth in many ways, with the occasional good song. Just as, you know, Phil Collins every now and again would drop a single that, like, you heard and you went, oh, that's pretty good. And then Lionel Richie, he'd have the occasional single. You go, hey, that's not a badly written song. Well done, Lionel Richie. But then most of the time, he's just there in a sweater, just sort of singing this. Everybody sing, everybody dance. Is, okay, is Lionel Richie from Jamaica?
No. We're going to party, caramba, fiesta. Getting in touch with his roots.
You know, he's... Come on and sing along. We're going to party. I guess this is no worse than Billy Joe Armstrong singing like he's from Brixton or something. Come on and sing it
all, all night long. All night. Now the accent is gone.
Somebody says, Dawn has no idea where Lionel Richie is from. Ask her! No, we're bluffing. I think that's...
I really don't know.
I actually have no idea. People dancing all in. Now it's back.
I have a feeling if Lionel Richie was Jamaican, though, we'd know. Like, it would have come up at some point.
He would know? Or we would know?
We would know.
This is not me saying this, by the way. This is listener Rick, who provided you with the iPhone case with the bottle opener.
Yeah.
He says, this is him saying this. He says, the all night long video is actually gayer than gay porn. I keep expecting steel drums to come in, and then they don't, and I'm eternally disappointed. What is happening all night long? Is it the sex?
I don't know. I keep conflating this with dancing on the ceiling. So I keep thinking he's dancing on a ceiling all night.
Oh my God, this totally needs to be like a Carnival Cruise Line song. He needs to be selling this to somebody, like some sort of travel agency. Re-experience Jamaica. Carnival Cruise Lines. And then it's a picture of like them on the ship's deck at night with the lights strung, and everybody's got a champagne flute, and they're all lame and dancing.
So I just listened to a little bit of If You Leave by Orchestral Maneuvers
right.
in the Dark, and I believe you could understand why I might think that it was actually that other song that was at the end of Pretty in Pink.
Well,
they both fall into that same general category.
Now, is Spandau Ballet from Pretty in Pink?
No.
Oh, okay, so you're just I actually don't know that movie all that well. I mean, that's one of those John Hughes joints that I sort of, you know, that I know a little bit, you know, but that I've seen the requisite number of times, and I don't know backward and forward, so. Okay, we have to be done with this. That's Lionel Richie. These are the top five songs from the week of October 29th, 1983.
Number two, Bonnie Tyler, Total Eclipse of the Heart.
Jim Steinman's song number two on this top five.
Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit lonely and you're never coming around.
By the way, progressive metal fans in the house will be interested to note that it appears that the band Sabotage stole their entire career from Jim Steinman. So just, you know what I'm talking about, too. Okay, here's something I don't know. The male lead on this, is that Jim Steinman?
I don't know.
Everyone knows it's Bonnie Tyler. I wonder who the male lead is. It sounds like it might be Jim Steinman, who is not a great singer, but who at one point, as Dave Marsh put it, tired of being the musically flatulent Geppetto to Meatloaf's Pinocchio, and decided to step out on his own. And he put out his own record, which is good if you like Jim Steinman, but... No, it's Rory Dodd, apparently, whoever that is.
Oh, Rory Dodd.
That guy. Wow, somebody just knew that. He did Rory Dodd, and says Jeremy, who says he did backup for a lot of Steinman projects. Excellent. Well done, Jeremy.
And he totally got jiggy with Jim Steinman, yo. Well, Jeremy was the one earlier who was, never mind.
Oh, about the off the hook?
Yes.
Well remembered. Listener Jeremy, you're my favorite person for today. The only person I have ever seen perform this song as a cover version, I mean, without doing it as like jokily or ironically, because then it's, you know what's worse? It's like if you go to karaoke and you're trying to sing this and you can't, That's okay. That there's no shame in that, because here's the thing. No one can sing this. But it, what's worse is the people who go and they know they can't sing it, and so they just do it as like the terribly, the intentionally bad, like stiff, ironic, you know, whatever. The only person I've ever seen perform this as a cover version where it was good was Storm, and that's it. And that's the only.
Oh yeah.
I mean, she does. She really nails this, but she's the only one. Keelan is requesting that we have Dawn's Black Talk Friday, where she talks like black people for the entire show.
Once upon a time, there was light in my life, but now there's only
the video for Total Eclipse of the Heart was directed by Russell McKagan, who directed a lot of music videos for the likes of Elton John and The Vapors and Berlin and stuff, and also directed films such as Highlander and Razorback.
Are you doing like a little pop-up video thing over there?
I am.
This is great, too. Here's the little jingle bells, the sleigh bells. That's a thing I never get tired of. And here's, and, you know, I know that this makes me a child of the 80s, but I am what I am. You know what I love? Not just a little bit of reverb, too much reverb. Listen to those drums.
I was going to say, I love that poundy, echoey thing that they do. It's always like, whoosh, it's supposed to sound like thunder or something.
Because the thing about the 80s is the 80s really is notable for having a lot of reverb, you know, where everything is drenched in echo. But it's like, and it sounds really dated, unless you do it the way Steinman did, where it's like, even then they must have said, like, you're too much reverb. We can't take it. I mean, it's like there's more echo on this song than anything you've ever heard in your life, which is sort of great.
And everything is just operatic.
Yeah. I mean, that is the Steinmanian method, not unlike Phil Spector to some degree. It is the too much of everything. Too many background vocals, too much reverb, too many piano riffs, too many, like, angelic opera breaks. And, of course, as has been told many times now, the great thing about Bonnie Tyler is how she wasn't born with this voice. She got it after a car accident. Her voice was actually very pure in tone until she was in a car accident, damaged her esophagus and her larynx. And she actually sent champagne and roses to the guy who hit her, who actually struck her car with his afterward, because her voice had the rasp that she had been training to have but could not quite achieve. The cheetah is the fastest animal on earth. These are the top five songs from October 29th, 1983. Right, I bet we're ending on a reel up here.
I wish we could stop here. Nothing I can say, a
total eclipse of the heart. But instead, it's...
Number one. No, Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton. Islands in the Stream.
All right, well, to make up for that, we'll play something special here in a second, and it's not Friday or anything related to that. By the way, after I said that listener Jeremy is my favorite person, he just typed, as I should be. Mm. All right, well done. I hate this song.
Yeah, I do too.
With a fine-tooth comb, what does that mean? How do you get someone with a fine-tooth comb?
Wow! Wow!
Yes.
I jab at you with my comb. You do something to
me that I can't explain. Are you holding the fine-tooth comb in your pocket and pretending it's a knife and saying, come with me now, don't make any noise? Oh, God damn. I was watching Oprah, I don't know, like 6 months or so ago, and Dolly Parton was the guest, and because they were talking about, she was celebrating that they're opening the premiere of 9 to 5, the musical, on Broadway, and so Dolly Parton was the guest, and it's like Oprah, you know, God love Oprah, and I really do in some ways, but it's like, she did the thing of, and later on this hour, we're going to have a special guest, and it's like, I'm going, Kenny Rogers. Later on, a special, it's Kenny Rogers. A surprise appearance. It's Kenny Rogers. And then it was Kenny Rogers. Yeah. And then they came out and they sang this.
Yeah, Porter Wagner's dead, so yeah, it's got to be Kenny Rogers.
I mean, what do you know? I mean, what are they really, you know, Dolly Parton had a young Jeezy. I mean, it's Kenny Rogers. I mean.
By the way, I was going to ask you, Little Romeo. Did he just become Romeo?
I believe so.
Okay. And then
Little Bow Wow
nothing?
Became Bow Wow.
Yeah.
Snoop Doggy Dog became Snoop Dogg.
Yeah. Okay, because I just wonder with these guys that are Lil something, other than Lil' Kim, who just is never going to get any taller, they just go on to be like whatever they were without the Lil.
I think that that works for women, because there's in pop music there's the infantilization of females anyway. I think for men though, at a certain point, that marketing tool just looks weird.
A little richer.
Yeah. But you know, he's basically both infantilized and a woman in some ways. So
I was thinking, like, the whole with Lil Bow Wow, it kind of works because Bow Wow is like not a name anybody else is using, but calling yourself Lil Romeo. The irony is in that you are the little Romeo.
Right, because if you were a big Romeo, that's less than impressive.
Right.
A full-sized Romeo.
So,
standard-issue Romeo.
So I just kind of wondered, you know, what happened to him when he wasn't Lil anymore.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Well, it's like with the whole young MC. Like, is he now just MC? No one knows.
Middle-aged MC.
Yeah.
Just doesn't sound as cool.
No. All right. I'm sorry.
Like, I admire Will Smith for dropping the whole Fresh Prince thing.
Difficult to do.
Yeah, because at some point you're not fresh anymore.
Oh, my God. Somebody said that. I forgot all about this. So it was not, but somebody reminded me that Jessica Simpson did this with Kenny Rogers.
Oh.
It was when it was the Jessica and Nick Variety show. They did this. Because that was the only way to follow up the him singing with Hit. Okay, we're done. God damn. All right. We're going to end this with this. Listener Bill, who was the one who noted that David McCauley is still alive and still writing books. I'm trying to get him on. Make a note of that, David McCauley. He says, what is the name of the old Rick Emerson, as opposed to young Rick Emerson or Lil Rick Emerson? What is the name of the old Rick Emerson ending theme song? And I'm assuming that he is not... Let me... Hold on. How can I make this go away? Hold on a second. Damn it. No, I've
just
lost it.
Unplug something.
No, hold on. I...
For the love of God.
I'm sorry.
Oh.
No. Oh, for the love of God.
Too many things.
Ah. Hold on.
Wow.
Hold on.
It's just chaos over there inside the board.
Okay.
Don't let it out.
Sorry. I'm assuming he's not referring to this, which is a Public Enemy song called Hazy Shade of Criminal. I'm assuming he is referring to this, which we actually used on KPAM. That was, by the way, I got to give the Bruce Hagler, who I swear to God, because we haven't used this forever. This used to be the thing that we opened the final segment of the show with. But then the final segment of the show started happening at literally 2:30, and it was like half an hour before the end of the show, and it just seemed like too early to be playing the closing theme.
Well, this is the song "Since I Don't Have You."
Yes,
which is played by who?
Here, the Guns N' Roses. It's Guns N' Roses. It's the Skyliners, and then as heard in American Graffiti, and then this is Guns N' Roses, and actually, it's a pretty great version of the song. This is just an instrumental, I think, But yeah, we used this to open the final segment of the show, but then at one point the final segment of the show again started happening at like 2:30, and it seemed way too early to be playing the closing, so I just dropped it. So when we get ready to do the KPAM show, Bruce Hagler emailed me, and he's like, hey, for the final segment of your final day on KPAM, I swear to God, he goes, you ought to just do that, because it'll make everyone cry. So there you go.
All right, he's a cruel man.
That's what that is. We'll do it one more time, and then we'll close it out. And we're done. So next Friday we'll be rejoined by Mr. Big Jim Willick, who will be hopefully recovered from his ailment and so forth. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. Don Taylor, events, technology, and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer, Bruce Hagler, chief of staff, Cheryl Kaneko. Don't forget, by the way, to listen to watch whether Outlook Portland this coming Sunday on cable channel 3. That is Northwest 32 TV, Portland CW. That is cable channel 3. Northwest 32 TV, Portland CW. You can also find it at outlookportland.com. It really, really is a great interview this Sunday, and I say that a lot, but this Sunday is really great. Taylor Clark, who used to write for Willamette Week and is the author of the fantastic book Starbucked, has written a new book called Nerve, which is a whole book about the scientific study of fear and stress, and it's awesome. And he's a great, great interview. He's just a really entertaining guy. So that is this coming Sunday on Outlook Portland. You got to be watching that. Do try to catch it, won't you? and whatnot. Big plans for your weekend?
Not really, no. No.
Okay.
More finishing on the ukulele.
More cheese.
Yes. Might catch up on some movies I haven't seen, like Source Code, that I really want to see.
OMG. Here, this Sunday, everybody, we order you now. We command you to watch The Killing on AMC. It is a Sunday show, right? That's the regular slot for that. If you haven't watched the first pilot, the first episode, which is actually the first two put into a single pilot, seriously, you must, you must, you must. I swear to God, you must watch The Killing. I'm just going to read this one email from a guy, and then we'll end it. This guy, Matt, says, Rick, The Killing is now taking up residence in my subconscious and just can't wait to give me nightmares. This is still an endorsement, though. He says, thanks for recommending it. It's making my head hum just thinking about that damn show. I'm not a big television watcher at all, but I was sold. My wife and I were blown away by The Killing. It's a new experience finally having a show to watch alongside you and Don. Smiley face. Matt, so there you go. I cannot speak highly enough. And don't get me wrong. I love Justified. I love a lot of the other shows that are on. The Killing is... If that pilot, if the rest of the episodes are anything as good as the pilot, I mean, it really is like going to be a thing to behold. So the pilot on AMC, the pilot just aired of The Killing on AMC, but The Killing, you got to watch it.
And I had one other thing that I completely forgot about. Tonight at the Roseway, Court and Fatboy have started, they're partnering with the owners of the Roseway Theater. They've discovered, apparently...
Oh, the Strangelove thing.
Yeah, there's, apparently, it turns out, you know, when they make digital copies of movies, they make new Blu-rays. They keep the brand new pristine remastered digital copy on hard drive. And the people at the Roseway were contacted by a distributor and said, would you like to show these digital copies at your theater? And they said, yes. And so Court and Bobby are working with them to get a bunch of movies that don't really fit the purview of their midnight movie.
Right.
And they'll be showing them at the Roseway on the big giant screen with the great sound system and just these brilliant, perfect digital copies. And the first of those is tonight at 8:30, and it's Dr. Strangelove. And tickets are $7.
And if you've never seen Dr. Strangelove, it is still fantastic. I mean, it really is. It really is great. I mean, it's a Cold War film, but I mean, it is genius. And it's, if you only know Peter Sellers as Inspector Clouseau, perhaps, this is a great, I mean, and it really is just a blistering, great black comedy. Even now, where it's just pitch black at times, but it's hilarious and it's on the big screen.
And even if you have seen it, this is a chance to see it on the big screen, a beautiful, beautiful like print of it, and then like with the Roseway's excellent sound system. So and again, it's only $7. It's not a whole lot of money.
You can find out more at Court and Fatboy.com. Finally, we want to wish a happy anniversary to listener John and his wife Kathy. So it is their 11th anniversary. So, which apparently, looking back now, I should retrace because today's my 11th anniversary. I'm turning the show off and going up. Oh, fine, going home to enjoy the company of my wife.
Oh well,
whatever.
Well, we take back our happy anniversary thing.
Fair
then.
Enough. I hope we have a fair to middling anniversary. Yeah.
Hope it was okay.
Yeah. So there you go. That's 11 years. So congratulations, et cetera, and so on and so forth. We're going to end the show. The Rick Emerson Show is made possible by a generous grant from y'all. So thank you, and please do spread the word, won't you? Whatnot. Over the course of the weekend, we'll have this week's Legion of News episodes followed by this week's Rick Emerson Show episodes and a whole bunch of other things. A smattering of whatnot that we'll put into the rotation place all weekend long at rickemersonshow.com. It is Friday, April 8th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening, and be safe. Have a good weekend. See you Monday. Bye now.